from the campus of Henry Ford College. We are WHFR Dearborn. Welcome to another Radio Vault installment, another scintillating installment. Let me quickly go over the menu before we get started with the festivities. We're going to kick it off in just a moment with a date with Judy from 1944. May 23rd, to be exact. The show is surrounding mysterious cards coming from a scale. We will also hear the Greg Gildersleeve, one of the earlier episodes with, not the really early episodes, but an episode featuring Hal Perry from 1947. We will follow that with a triple play of Jack Benny. All shows from 1948. A show called I Was Framed. We'll follow that by the episode in which Barbara Stanwyck was the actor, and they did a kind of a skit playoff of the Sorry Wrong Number radio show, although it was Agnes Moorhead, as you should know, who played the radio version of Sorry Wrong Number. But they got Barbara Stanwyck to do the movie, and that's who Jack Benny's guest was back on October 17, 1948. We will follow that from 1948, right? We'll follow that with another Jack Benny show. This is the one that originated from Detroit, and Don Wilson carried a lot of weight at that time. From June 13, 1948 was when that Jack Benny show was heard. And then we're going to have a little fun with a little bit of juvenile science fiction. The Planet Man. We'll hear the first couple of episodes of that. Once again, from the campus of Henry Ford College, we are WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists and old-time radio on Tuesday between 10 and 1 o'clock. If you're ready, let's go back now to May 23rd, 1944.
Tums, famous quick relief for acid indigestion, presents A Date with Judy.
Is this Judy Foster?
Yes, it is.
Have you got a date tonight?
No, I haven't.
Good. This is Mr. Spivars, your history teacher.
Well, jeepers, Mr. Spivars, do you want a date?
No, I merely called to suggest you get out your history book and do your homework for a change.
That's Judy, folks. Judy Foster, the cutest date in town. Your date with her each Tuesday at the same time is arranged by the makers of Tums, famous quick relief for acid indigestion. Well, let's see. We pick up Judy and her 12-year-old brother, Randolph, as they walk down State Street.
Hey, Judy, which way are you going?
I'm turning around this corner.
That's not the way home.
I know. I'm going to the Super Duper Sugar Bowl.
On the day before we get our allowances?
Oh, I'm not going to eat anything.
Then what are we going to the Super Duper Sugar Bowl for?
To get weighed, naturally.
I don't get it.
Randolph, there's the most terrific scale in front of the sugar bowl. It's utterly marvelous.
Does it give you a better weight than the other scales in town?
Who cares about weight?
Well, people who get on a scale, probably.
Randolph, the important thing about this scale is it tells your fortune. The most marvelous thing happened to Barbara Windsocket yesterday.
What?
Well, Barbara got weighed, and a little card came out that said, "Look out, you will meet with an accident." And last night she fell down and broke her leg.
Is that good?
Well, it shows the scale knows what it's talking about, doesn't it? Oh, here it is. Oh, Randolph, would you lend me a penny? I don't want to break a nickel.
Oh, certainly. Here, be my guest.
Thanks, Randolph. Now, I put the penny in here, and a little card comes out here, and here's my fortune.
I'm all a flutter.
Oh, listen to this. You will meet a tall, dark, and handsome man who will take you on a boat trip.
Does it say whether you'll get seasick or not?
Isn't this marvelous, a boat trip? Oh, Randolph, do you think Mother will let me go?
Not unless the tall, dark, and handsome man is Father, who isn't very tall.
Or very dark.
Or very handsome. You know, Judy, if this fortune comes true, I'll eat my hat.
You don't have a hat.
I am willing to borrow Uncle Oscar's pith helmet for the occasion.
Well, this fortune does present certain difficulties. But I'm sure the scale will work it out somehow. I have every confidence in it.
Don't look now, but isn't that your friend Lulu Benson coming toward us?
Yes, and she's with a man. Oh, Randolph, he's tall and dark and handsome.
He isn't wearing a sailor suit.
Why, hello, Lulu.
Oh, hello, Judy.
How are you, Lulu? I haven't seen you in utterly ages.
Don't be absurd, Judy. You saw me from 9 to 3 at school today.
So I did. Wasn't that very silly of me, Mr.,
Okay. Judy, may I present Mr. Cooper? Eric, this is Judy. Let's go, Eric. We're in a hurry.
How do you do, Mr. Cooper?
Hello, Judy. I have to call you Judy because that's all I know.
Oh, that's perfectly all right, Mr. Cooper.
Well, in that case, Judy, you'll have to call me Eric.
I'll be very glad to. Eric?
That's just dandy. Now, let's go, Eric. We have to be over to Oogie Pringle's house by...
Oh, Eric, I'd like you to meet my younger brother. This is Randolph. Randolph, Mr. Cooper.
How do you do?
If I let you call me Randolph, can I call you Eric?
Well, goodbye. It's been very nice running into you, Judy. Come, Eric.
Goodbye, Judy. I'll be seeing you, I hope.
Goodbye, Eric. I hope so, too.
Come on, Judy. Let's go home. Standing in front of the sugar bowl like this is making me hungry.
Eric. Eric Cooper. Oh, Randolph. Wasn't that scintillating? The way my fortune is working out already. He was tall, and he was dark, and he was handsome.
Well, with the exception of the short, light, and ugly ones, who isn't?
Dear, you're so excited.
It was just too absolutely amazing.
All right, tell us.
Judy got weighed.
Is that why she's so excited?
My word, Judy. How much did you weigh?
Well, that has nothing to do with it.
You got weighed and your weight has nothing to do with it?
The important thing is Judy is going on a boat trip with a tall, dark, and handsome man.
She's what?
It was my fortune. The scale tells your fortune, and that's what it said. And right afterwards, I met a tall, dark, and handsome man.
Man?
About 17 years old.
Go away, children, will you? I'm in a terrible mood. I have something important on my mind, and I can't concentrate on these inconsequentialities.
Inconsequentialities? Father, do you realize...
I realize I'm going to be rather hard to live with if the subject of this conversation doesn't improve rapidly. Scales, fortunes, boat trips.
What's the matter with him, Mother?
Just business.
Don't just business me. I'm about to make the most difficult decision in my career, that's all.
Anything I can help you with, Father?
Oh, that's a good one. You help me. Can't even help myself.
Well, just what is it, dear? I don't understand it.
I've been trying to explain it to you. If you'd put down that sewing and listen...
I'm only ripping out of him, dear.
I don't care what you're ripping. You want to understand what I'm saying? Stop ripping and listen.
All right, dear. Now, what is it?
I have been offered a subcontract.
Yes?
If I accept it, I can make a lot of money.
Well, accept it then, Father. That doesn't sound like a very difficult decision to make.
But Judy, if I accept this contract and can't deliver the goods by a certain date, then I can lose a lot of money.
Well, then refuse the contract.
Well, Judy's right. It certainly doesn't sound like a difficult decision.
Refuse it? And pass up a chance to make $5,000? You think I'm crazy, Dora?
Well, then accept it. Jeepers, I don't see what's so hard about it.
Accept it, she says. Judy, if I can't deliver, I have to pay a penalty. I can lose my shirt.
Melvin, have you got suspenders on?
What have suspenders got to do with this?
I was just looking at your shirt. You know, the collar's all frayed.
Well, what about it?
Well, I thought if you didn't have suspenders on, you could slip off your shirt quickly, and then I could turn that collar over.
Dora, I'm talking business, and you concern yourself with collars.
Father, is there any chance you wouldn't be able to deliver the goods you're supposed to manufacture?
Is there a chance? Well, for the love of heaven, have you heard there's a war going on?
Well,
have you heard about shortages?
Well,
do you know metal is hard to get?
Well,
that manpower is something you don't have very much of these days.
I'm exhausted.
Gracious, Melvin, if it's going to mean all that trouble, turn the contract down.
But then I lose my chance to make $5,000.
Well, if that's the way you feel about it, dear, by all means, accept the contract.
What I like about you, Dora, is that you're so definite about things. Once you make up your mind about something, there's no changing.
Oh, thank you, dear. I was trying to help.
A lot of help this family's going to be. I don't know why I ever bothered telling you.
I have the most terrific idea. Father, I know exactly how you can make up your mind.
How?
Get Wade.
Judy, go and do your homework.
I don't have any to do.
Well, then read a book or manicure your nails or your toes, but do something.
But, Father, you have to make a decision, don't you? And this scale is positively uncanny. Remember what it said on my fortune, and then I met a tall, dark, and handsome man? You know what happened to Barbara Windsocket?
No, I don't, and I don't want to know.
She broke her leg.
Huh?
It was positively marvelous.
Breaking her leg was positively marvelous?
Well, of course. The scale told her it was going to happen, and it did.
Judy, how can you believe that nonsense? You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Now go upstairs and put your hair up in curlers.
In the middle of the afternoon?
Anytime. Just so I can be alone and think. If that phone is for anybody but me, I'm leaving the room.
I'll let you know in a second. Hello?
Hello, may I speak to Miss Judy Foster, please?
You may. Judy, it's for you.
I'm leaving the room.
Who is it, Randolph?
You'll be very happy to know. A man.
That's all I need to know. Goodbye.
Oh, I'm coming with you now, but I want to fix that shirt.
Oh, I'm highly bored. I'll go over to Curly's house. Goodbye, Judy.
Goodbye.
What was that?
Oh, I was just saying goodbye to Randolph. To you, I mean, hello.
Oh, hello. This is Eric Cooper.
It is.
Judy, what are you doing Saturday?
Oh, not a thing. My evening is perfectly free.
Oh, I'd like to give you the evening, but I already have a date. I'm afraid the afternoon is the only time I can work you in.
Oh, that'll be perfect. My Saturday afternoon happens to be completely free.
Oh, swell. Would you like to go to a movie?
Yes, but, Eric, I have the most terrific idea.
Why?
Why don't we go for a boat ride?
A boat ride?
Uh-huh. There are some rowboats in the park, and... Oh, Eric, wouldn't it be lovely?
Well, maybe. Sort of a picnic, huh?
Uh-huh. Sort of a picnic.
Well, okay. If you bring the sandwiches.
Oh, I'd love to. Pick me up at 2:00. Well, so long.
So long.
Oh, Mother, Father, come on down.
What is it, Judy?
Something scintillating has happened.
What's all the excitement?
That scale is positively uncanny. I'm going on a boat ride.
Well, Sir Judy has fixed things so that her fortune is working out just as the scale said it would. And now back to A Date with Judy. Well, Judy got weighed on a scale that tells fortunes, and her fortune has come true with a little help from Judy. She's trying to persuade Father, who has an important business decision to make, to enlist the scale's aid. So far, she hasn't persuaded him. When we pick up the Fosters, Father is still in a stew.
Oh, heavens, what should I do?
Take the contract.
But if I do, there's always the chance I'd lose a heck of a lot of money.
Well, then refuse it.
No, I'd be better off flipping a coin or putting some numbers in a hat or...
You'd only get on the scale, Father, like I keep telling
you. Judy, if I hear any more about that silly, superstitious, idiotic...
Superstitious? How can you say such things, Father? Why, yesterday, Oogie Pringle got weighed, and his fortune said, a glamorous woman will be your undoing.
What's so miraculous about that?
Right afterwards, his car smashed into a billboard with Hedy Lamarr's picture on it.
Coincidence. Sheer coincidence.
When you can't slough off what happened to Mrs. Slutzhammer by calling it coincidence.
Oh, Lord, do I have to listen to that one, too? All right, what happened to Mrs. Slutzhammer?
Well, she got on the scale, and a card came out saying, you will soon get rid of a troublesome person. And when she got home, Mr. Schlutzhammer had been reclassified 1A.
Oh, that scale is pretty smart, isn't it?
Oh, is that so? I suppose you'd like to get rid of me, too.
Oh, why, Melvin, I never said any such thing.
You implied it.
Why, Melvin, I did not.
You laughed when Judy said what happened to Mr. Schlutzhammer.
Well, I only laughed because the draft board must have made a mistake. Mr. Schlutzhammer's 49 years old. Oh, you're so touchy these days, Melvin. Yeah.
If you just give the scale a chance,
anybody
Father...
Anybody who mentions that scale again is going to get a punch in the nose.
Hi, everybody. Guess what happened with the scale?
What, Randolph?
Well, Curly Wyman and I were standing in front of the super-duper sugar bowl, wishing we could have a chocolate sundae, but we only had 6 cents.
Yes?
Well, so long as I couldn't afford a sundae, and there was the scale...
Yes?
Well, I invested a penny, and guess what?
What?
I hit the jackpot.
You what?
All I did was put in my penny, and 19 cents came out.
Well, what's so remarkable about that? The scale was broken.
Ah, but my fortune.
What did it say?
It said plain as day, quote, you will come into money, unquote.
This whole business is sheer nonsense. Anybody who believed that a piece of machinery had psychic powers is an unmitigated moron. Am I right, Dora?
Yes, dear.
Goodbye.
Where are you going?
Out for a walk.
For a walk?
Yes, yes. I was just thinking I'm getting terribly fat.
Melvin, what are you doing?
Looking out the window.
Oh, Melvin, it must be 4 a.m. Get back in bed.
Why should I? I can't sleep anyhow.
Dear, are you still worrying about that contract?
Yes, I'm still worrying about that contract.
Melvin, why don't you see what the scale says about it?
Dora, if I hear any more about that scale...
It works so well for me. A little card came out of it.
I don't care what the little card said. I don't want to hear about it.
Melvin, what are you doing?
Getting dressed, that's what I'm doing.
At 4 a.m.?
Is it 4 a.m. at 4 a.m.?
Well, where are you going?
Out for a walk, that's where I'm going.
Oh, Melvin, are you going to try the scale?
Well, of course I'm not. What, do you think I am, a fool? When a man has an important business decision to make, he depends on his brains, not on little cards that come out of a scale. Scale. I wouldn't go within a mile of it. Doggone it. Come all this distance and I don't have a penny. Mister?
Yes?
Could you lend me a penny?
Oh, broke, are you?
No, I'm not broke. I just want to borrow a penny, that's all.
Well, that's all right. Here's a dime. Buy yourself a cup of coffee.
I don't want a cup of coffee. I just want a penny.
You're the cheapest panhandler I ever saw.
I am not cheap. I mean, I am not a Look, I have got money in my pocket. I got a 50-cent piece. I got a $10 bill. I just want to borrow a penny.
What for?
Well, if you must know, I want to get weighed.
At 5 o'clock in the morning?
I always get weighed at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm eccentric. I'm superstitious, see?
Oh. Well, okay, buddy. Here's your penny.
Thank you.
Well, how much do you weigh?
Who cares how much I weigh?
You come down here at 5 in the morning, you borrow a penny to work the scale, and now you don't care how much you weigh?
Well, of course not. He who risks nothing gets nothing.
What was that?
I said he who risks nothing gets nothing. That's what it says on this card. Well, say, this is great. Say, thanks for the penny, mister. So long.
Well, that guy's nuts. Well, the scales made quite an impression on Father, not to mention the impression Father made on the man loaning the penny. And now, back to A Date with Judy. Well, Father has finally fallen for the scale idea himself. We pick him up as he comes into the dining room for breakfast.
Well, Dora, it's all settled. I've called Mr. Hendricks and told him I'll sign the contract.
Oh, that's fine, Melvin.
How'd you make up your mind, Father?
Sheer reasoning power, that's all. There's a certain science to these things, Randolph. I figured it all out mathematically, and I came to the conclusion that I can't lose by taking the contract.
Just the same, I wish you'd have consulted the scale. Remember what happened to Barbara and Mrs. Schlusshammer and the boat ride I'm going on?
No, honey. That fortune-telling stuff is all right for women and children. I won't say anything against it. But when it comes to a man and his business problems, only good, solid figuring will solve them.
Oh, Melvin, sometimes I just admire your mind so much.
Well, anybody can think these things out if he just concentrates hard enough.
Oh, well, I wonder who that is.
Well, nobody ever phones me so early in the morning, but I'll take it anyhow.
Little martyr.
Hello?
Hello, Judy. This is Eric.
Oh, hello.
Judy, I've got to break the date to go boat riding.
You do?
Yeah. Lulu says she has a previous date with me Saturday afternoon. I don't remember it, but she's pretty firm about it. I'm sorry. Call you again sometime.
Yes, do.
Okay. So long.
Who was that, dear? Eric Cooper.
Oh, the tall, dark, and handsome man is going to take you for a boat ride?
Yeah. Except he's not going to take me for a boat ride.
He's not going... Judy, what are you saying?
He has a previous date with Lulu Benson.
Well, he can't do this to me. I mean, to you. The nerve of him.
I never saw you get so excited about Judy's dates before.
Well, it's about time somebody got excited about them. Breaking dates on her like that, it's outrageous.
Well, if she can stand it, I should think you could.
Well, I can't. He's not going to get away with it.
Why, Melvin, I never saw you take on anything so hard.
You expect me to sit here and take it easy when my own daughter is stood up?
Oh, that's true. I am stood up.
Oh, now, don't you mind. When I was a girl, your father stood me up lots of times.
I did not. I never stood you up.
You did, too. The time that attractive-looking girl from Minneapolis with some buck teeth was in town.
I did not stand you up. I merely changed our date to another evening.
Now, Melvin, all this yelling. You see what you've done to Judy?
Well, she ought to be upset. I'm upset, too. Stood up. It's disgraceful.
Well, I'm going upstairs and calm Judy down. You ought to be ashamed.
If she were any kind of a wife, she'd stay here and calm me down.
Father, me thinks there is something behind all this that does not meet the eye.
Behind it? What could be behind it? I'm simply furious because a young...
Father... This hasn't anything to do with a certain scale in front of the super-duper sugar bowl, has it?
Well, of course not. Well, certainly not. Whatever gave you an idea like that?
Oh, nothing. Father, what did your fortune say?
He who risks nothing gets...
Oh, that's all right, Father. I kind of fell for that scale thing myself.
Well... It just worked out so well for everybody else, I kind of...
Sure. I know exactly how you felt.
Now that kid breaks his date and upsets my entire confidence in the whole thing.
Yeah, that is too bad.
Randolph, that boy has got to take Judy on a boat ride Saturday afternoon. He's got to. Otherwise, I'll never have a peaceful moment the whole time I'm trying to fulfill that contract.
Well, you could fix it so he has to take Judy out Saturday afternoon.
I could. How?
Well, Eric broke his date with Judy on account of having a previous date with Lulu Benson.
Yeah.
Well, what if Lulu Benson had a still previouser date with somebody else and had to break her date with Eric?
Well, it's a good idea, but how can we arrange it?
Well, we could get some tall, dark, and handsome man to call Lulu.
Yeah, but who?
You, Father. You.
Hello. Lulu Benson, please.
This is Lulu.
It is? Oh. Well, this is Melvin,
Hockenlocker.
Oh, yeah. Hockenlocker. Melvin Hockenlocker. I met you at a party a couple of months ago.
You did?
Yes, I did. And, I admired you very much at the time, Miss Benson. Lulu?
Nice going, Father.
You did?
Yes, I did. I called you to remind you of the date we have this Saturday afternoon.
This Saturday afternoon? Why, I don't remember making any dates for this.
Of course you do. We were standing right in the middle of the room, I remember it perfectly. And you said to me, why, Melly, I just love having a date with you on May the 27th, 1944.
I
did? Well, of course I remember distinctly.
Well, I don't.
Now, you wouldn't go back on your word, would you?
No, but...
Good. Okay, I'll see you Saturday. So long. Well, how was I, Randolph?
Stinking. It'll do, it'll do.
Father, guess what?
What?
Eric Cooper just phoned me, and he wants to make the date for Saturday again.
Well, that's great. I'm tickled to hear.
He said Lulu broke the previous date he had with him.
All right. But I'm going to work. I hope you have a nice time on your date.
Oh, I'm not going on the date.
You're not getting... What did you say?
I said I'm not going on the date.
You're not? Why not?
Well, he can't just shove me around like that. Make the date with me, then break it, then try to make it again. I just turned him down flat.
You turned him down flat? A nice, fine, upstanding man like Eric Cooper?
Why, Father, you just said the most terrible things about him a little while ago. You...
Judy, I'm ashamed of you. You call him right back and apologize.
Apologize? Why, I will not. Not after what he did to me. I wouldn't go out with him if he were the last man on earth.
Oh, why do these things happen to me?
Hey, Father.
What do you want, Randolph?
You are in trouble.
In trouble?
Yeah.
Nonsense. I couldn't be in any more trouble than I am.
Oh, yes, you could. Remember when you called up Lulu and asked for a date?
Yes, of course. Why?
Well, Mother was listening on the upstairs phone, and is she furious?
Oh, for the love of heaven.
Thank you.
do you suppose it'll ever stop raining?
Frankly, no.
Things aren't bad enough with your mother not talking to me, and now it rains for 3 whole days, and my whole factory basement's flooded.
Hello, Father Randolph.
Hello.
Guess what happened to me?
I give up.
Well, the whole downtown is practically flooded, and I was trying to get across the street, only I couldn't, when a tall, dark, and handsome man came along in a boat.
A boat?
Mm-hmm. And rowed me across the street.
Eureka! It worked! The scale worked after all.
Well, yeah, it did, didn't it?
Well, I feel like a new man. Everything's fine. Now all I have to worry about is when your mother's going to start talking to me again.
That you will have to figure out scientifically.
I intend to. Randolph, can you lend me a penny? Penny, penny, let me see. Oh, here it is. I don't know why I'm doing this darn fool thing. But, Dora, what are you doing at the Super Duper Sugar Bowl?
I'm not talking to you, Melvin.
Oh, Dora, you still upset about that silly Lulu Benson business?
I don't care to discuss it with you.
Dora, do you honestly believe that I'd call up Lulu Benson for a date? Well, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard of. If I were going to call up anybody, I'd call up Greer Garson or somebody.
Oh, so you've got a crush on Greer Garson?
Yes, I never said anything of the sort. I merely said this whole thing is nonsense. Why, to think that you would even think that I'd call up Lulu for a date. Happily married man with 2 children. Why, if I did ask her for a date, I bet she wouldn't give me one.
Oh, so you're furious because she refused you.
She didn't refuse me.
She accepted
you. Dora, this is ridiculous. How can you believe I'd do anything like this? At my age.
I'm just as old as you are, Melvin Foster. I suppose you think that I've got 1 foot in the grave.
I never said that. Dora, the whole thing is ridiculous.
No, I thought it was ridiculous, too, but then I came down and asked the scale.
You asked the scale?
Yes. Oh, look what the guard says. Don't be too sure of your husband.
Dora, I'm ashamed of you. Taking the word of a silly old scale, it's moronic. It's absolutely childish.
Is it? Well, I see you've got a card in your hand. You must believe in it, too.
Well, nothing of the sort. I simply came down here to get weighed. I hadn't even looked at the card. I'll tell you what. Now, this will prove it. It'll show you the whole thing is wacky. I'll read it to you.
All right, do.
All right. It says, you are in terrible trouble.
You see? Now, don't tell me that scale doesn't know what it's doing.
Yeah, but Dora...
I'm going home.
Dora...
And remember, I'm still not talking to you.
Well, Father, I fixed you up. I explained the whole thing to Mother.
Oh, Randolph, you did?
Yeah, I told her just why you called Lulu Benson, that you were just fine to make Judy's fortune work out. And she forgives you.
She'll talk to me again? Oh,
wonderful. Melvin, I'm sorry. I was so silly.
Oh, Dora.
Oh, forgive me, dear. You know, the idea of you calling me a young girl like Lulu Benson. I should have known better.
Sure. Imagine me calling a young girl like Lulu Benson when I have you. I mean...
Oh, I know what you mean, darling. It's all right. Give me a kiss.
Thanks, dear.
And now I'm going out to the kitchen and make you a nice cup of coffee.
It's just what I want.
Father, I was just thinking.
And what, Randolph?
Well, do you think it's nice to stand a girl up on a date?
What do you mean?
Well, I bet right this minute Lulu Benson is sitting home waiting for you to take her on the date you asked her for.
Oh. Well, do you think so?
Well, sure. It seems to me the polite thing to do would be to call her up and tell her Melvin Fockenlocker is a fictitious character.
You're absolutely right. You hand me the phone.
Hello?
Oh, hello. Lulu?
Yes, who's this?
This is Melly Hockenlocker.
Well, where are you?
Lulu, there's something I have to tell you about our date this afternoon.
Melvin!
Dora! When did you come back?
In time to hear everything. Oh, Melvin, I never want to see you again.
Dora! Oh, now what'll I do?
Well, here's a penny, Father.
We'll be back with the Fosters next week. A Date with Judy is written by Aline Leslie and stars Louise Erickson and Dix Davis. The music was composed by Paul Sautel and conducted by Konstantin Bakalenikov through the courtesy of RKO Studios. The program is produced and directed by Helen Mack. Be with us again next Tuesday at the same time to keep your date with Judy. And remember, night and day... National Broadcast.
Broadcasting Company. KFI Los Angeles.
And in reality, this is WHFR in Dearborn, coming to you from Henry Ford College. And we're in the midst of a comedy extravaganza. Just about the end of May, can you believe? This month has flown by. Well, you are in tune with Radio Vault, coming your way every Tuesday morning between 10 in the morning and 1 o'clock in the p.m. here on 89.3 WHFR.FM on your FM and digital dial. Thanks for being with us. Up and coming next, the music lover from 1947, Harold Perry, as the Great Gildersleeve. Original broadcast date, April 30th of 1947. The Great Music Lover. That's coming up in just a scant moments. Thanks for hanging with us here on Radio Vault.
Detroit, west side, suburbs downriver. Tune in locally to 89.3, the station making waves. Join me, Sean Daniel, Monday, 9 to 11 p.m. with Beats to the Rhymes. The only radio show where we focus on beats and lyrics, Detroit music, and underground hip-hop. Listen worldwide online at WHFR.FM, Dearborn, Detroit.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project, so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
The Kraft Foods Company presents Harold Perry as the Great Gildersleeve. Roger. The Great Gildersleeve is brought to you by the Kraft Foods Company, makers of parquet margarine. Now let's see what Gildersleeve is up to.
Well, thanks for the lift, Judge. Big help. I was a little late. Thanks very much. Be seeing you.
Oh, Gildy.
Yes?
You happen to know whether I left my rubbers at your house yesterday?
Rubbers? No, I don't, Judge. But if they turn up, I'll let you know. Well, thanks a lot.
I believe I'll just run in and ask Bertie, if you don't mind.
What do you want your rubbers now for, Judge? It isn't raining.
I'd just like to locate them.
I told you, if they turn up, I'll let you know.
You don't mind if I come in and ask?
No, no, come ahead.
Of course, if I'm not welcome.
No, no, you drove me home, Horace. Come ahead. Oh, Bertie! Shh, quiet, Judge. There's a lesson going on.
I didn't make a sound.
Shh! How can Miss Piper teach Bertie with people shouting all over the place?
Sorry, Mr. Gildersleeve. I thought I heard you holler. Good evening, Judge.
Evening, Bertie.
Did the judge leave his rubbers here, Bertie?
Was that the judge's? I thought they must belong to some family room.
I knew they were here.
Here you are, Judge.
I'm ever so much obliged to you, Bertie. I wouldn't want to lose these, even though they have been patched.
You're welcome, Judge. Leave them here anytime.
Yes, you're welcome, Horace. Well?
I knew that I'd left them here because I recall saying to Mrs. Fogle yesterday, as I departed, I said I believe I'll wear my rubbers.
Yeah, well, never mind about that now, Judge. The rubbers have been found.
Well, I'm just telling you what I said to Mrs. Fogle.
I know, I know.
Okay, Miss Piper, so long.
Oh, and Leroy, you'd better work on the sonatina a little. That was really...
Okay. Hi, Unc. Hi, Judge.
Leroy, when Miss Piper tells you something, you should listen.
I did.
What did she just tell you?
Work on the sonatina.
All right, see that you do.
I will.
Just a minute. Where do you think you're going?
Out.
All right, go ahead.
For corn's sake.
Well, Judge, you've got your rubber, so, well, lesson over for today.
Oh, hello.
Judge, you know Miss Piper.
I believe I've had that pleasure, yes.
Good afternoon, Judge Hooker.
The judge forgot his rubbers. But he's got them now.
I was just thinking that I might offer to drive Miss Piper home. My car is right out in front.
Oh, no, she'd rather walk.
Well, it'll be no...
No, she'd rather walk, wouldn't you, Miss Piper? Yes. Don't forget to take your rubbers with you, Judge. Better put them on, old boy.
What for? It isn't raining.
Well, you don't want to take any chances, do on the grass, you know. A man can't be too careful at your age.
I'll carry them if I so choose.
Independent as the day he was born. All right, Judge, suit yourself then. But bon voyage.
Good day, Miss Piper.
Goodbye, Judge.
Don't fall now. Ha! Let's wait a minute till he goes, huh, before we start.
Well, really, Mr. Gildersleeve, there's no reason for you to chaperone me. It's broad daylight. I can perfectly
walk. I wouldn't think of letting you walk home alone.
Well, why not? What could possibly happen to me?
The boogeyman.
Oh, you say such silly things.
I don't care. Maybe we can start now. Let me just peek out and see if the judge is still...
What do you see?
He's putting on his rubbers.
Why are we going this way? This isn't the way to my house.
It's one way. You'll see. We'll get there.
Every time you take me a different way.
Do you mind?
No. Only each one seems to be a little longer.
Well, that's because I like to walk with you, Joanne. Do you like to walk with me?
Why, yes, I enjoy it very much.
You say you like to walk with me. Why?
Why what?
Why do you like to walk with me?
I don't know. I just enjoy it.
Why do you enjoy it?
Well, I don't know. I guess it's just because you're different somehow.
Oh? How am I different?
I don't know.
Well, you say I'm different. You must have something in mind.
No. You just seem different, that's all.
Oh.
For one thing, I don't know anyone else who would walk all the way home with me every time the way you do.
Has it ever occurred to you, Joanne, that I might have a reason for that?
You must be very fond of walking.
I am. I'm a great walker. You've no idea how I look forward to these little afternoon walks of ours, Joanne. Do you look forward to them?
Yes, I do.
All week long, while I'm chained to my desk there in the city hall, weighed down by the cares of office, I dream little dreams.
You know, I never think of you as the water commissioner somehow.
Don't you? How do you think of me?
Oh, I don't know. Just as Mr. Gildersleeve, I guess. Leroy's nice uncle.
Oh.
It must be a terrible responsibility.
Being Leroy's uncle?
Oh, no, being water commissioner.
Oh, it is. Yes, my mind is seldom off it. As a matter of fact, my friends tell me I drive myself too hard. That's the way it is. When a man has nothing else to live for, he's apt to lose himself in his job.
But you always seem to take things so easily.
It's a mask I wear.
I don't know anyone else who'd take time off just to go for walks this way.
Time off? That's the way it appears to you, I suppose. Actually, I'm never away from the job. Why, under these very streets, as we stroll along, under these very streets are water mains. 6-inch, I believe. And from the mains, pipelines branch off to all the houses. A giant network. Arteries carrying water, the lifeblood of the whole community. All my responsibility.
I never thought of that.
And down there at the reservoir, there's the pump, like a great heart beating away. The heart of this whole town. That pump has to be kept going. Charlie Anderson's in charge of that. And I'm in charge of Charlie Anderson.
Really, I don't see how you can sleep nice.
I can't. But it isn't the waterworks that keeps me awake. Do you know what it is, Joanne?
Yes, and I'll tell you just what to do for it, because I know what my father does. Eat a bowl of milk toast before you go to bed. It sends him right off to sleep. Did I say something?
Come along, Joanne. Found it, I take her home, and what happens?
Yoo-hoo, Throckmorton!
Huh? Oh. Hi, Leela.
Wait right there. I'm coming down.
I gotta be getting home to supper.
Don't go away now, you hear? I want to talk to you.
What does she want? Well, what does it matter? What does anything matter?
You look just like Napoleon retreating from Moscow.
Why?
Trudging along like that with your chin on your chest. Where's Joanne? I saw you two walking down.
I took her home.
Don't tell me you've had a lover's quarrel.
Nope.
Oh.
No quarrel. She just had a date for this evening with some snake in the grass.
Who was it? Was it that handsome young Mr. Albright?
I didn't give her the satisfaction of asking her.
Now, I won't hear a word against Joanne Throckmorton because I think she's just too sweet. Of course, I don't know that I think she's quite the girl for you, but I think she's sweet.
Well, she's sweet, but she's just like all the rest. They're all the same. Women are all the same.
Oh, now, that's just about the silliest statement I ever heard. I'm not.
Well, I'm not talking about you.
Throckmorton, I don't want to influence you in any way, of course, but if there's ever any way that I can help, I want you to feel that you can come to me and confide in me. I want you to feel that, Throckmorton.
Well, thanks, Leela.
How is it going, Throckmorton? Are you and Joanne getting anywhere?
Getting anywhere?
I mean, how does it stand now?
You tell me. I don't know how anything stands. I don't know where I am with her from one minute to the next. Like this afternoon, I walk her all the way home, and then I find out she's got a date for the evening with somebody else. Without a word to me.
Had you asked her for a date yourself?
Well, no, but gosh.
You two aren't engaged or anything, are you?
Well, not exactly, no.
Have you ever proposed to her? Have you ever told her you love her?
What do you want to know for?
I'm your friend, Throckmorton.
Well, no, I guess I haven't, come to think of it.
Oh, gracious, how can you expect the poor girl to... Men are so ridiculous.
Well, where's all this intuition you hear so much about? Women are supposed to be able to read your mind.
That's the trouble with you men. You think we have nothing better to read. She may be reading somebody else's mind. Mr. Albright's, for instance.
Darn him. Why doesn't he stick to his banking?
I'll tell you what I'd do, Throckmorton. Of course, maybe you don't want any advice from me.
Oh, I do, Leela. You're a woman.
Well, women can be sensible, you know. And I believe Joanne, at heart, is a sensible girl. I really do.
Oh, she is.
Well, I'd go to her and I'd just put my cards on the table.
You would?
I think it's the only way. I'd say to her, Joanne, I'm offering you the love of an older man. I'm 44, and I...
43.
43, going on 44. You must be quite frank with her, Throckmorton. She'll respect you for it.
Well...
I'd say to her, I'm 44, and I have a nephew aged 12 and a niece who's almost as old as you are. But all that I have is yours.
You think she might...
I think it might settle the whole thing.
But, Leela, suppose... she said no.
I've known you for a long time, Throckmorton, and I've never yet known you to take no for an answer.
By George, maybe you're right, Eva. Maybe I've been too timid about the whole thing.
Faint heart never won fair lady.
Maybe you ought to just march in there and say to her, Joanne, look here, I've got a proposition to make.
How could anyone resist?
The only trouble is, it's kind of hard to talk to her about things like that. She's so darned innocent. She's either innocent or she's kidding.
We'll hear from the great man again very soon. Now let's get back to the great Gildersleeve. Again, he is walking Joanne Piper home. But today, full of his plans for a showdown, he has brilliantly managed to make the trip by way of the Summerfield Reservoir. A romantic spot, the reservoir, he thinks, and maybe he's right.
Here, Joanne, we can sit here on the grass. Nice and warm.
I shouldn't stay long, but the water looks so lovely.
The reservoir, yeah, it's pretty. I'm the boss of it, you know. I'm the boss of the whole shebang.
It's your kingdom.
Huh? Oh, yes, that's right. My kingdom.
It's beautiful. I must go down to the sea again, to the lonely sea in the sky.
How's that?
And all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by. That's John Masefield. Do you like poetry?
Do I? I'm crazy about it. Say, Joanne.
Poetry and music have a lot in common.
I guess so. I never thought much about it. What I was going to
rhythm
say...
Rhythm is so important in both.
Why, George, you're right. Rhythm, yes. What I was saying...
Oh, yes, what was it?
Well, about these walks. I wouldn't want you to get the wrong idea.
What do you mean?
Well, some people might think that just because we're taking these long walks together that there's something going on.
Why, how perfectly ridiculous.
Yes, isn't it? But that just goes to show you how some people are, Joanne. Some old busybodies.
Oh, who cares about things?
That's what I say.
I don't think it's anybody's business but mine if I want to go for a walk.
Yeah?
Or who I go with.
Sure.
Or if I happen to be madly in love with somebody.
You are?
Oh, no.
Oh.
I just mean it's nobody else's business if I am.
Oh, yes.
And the other person involved, of course.
Oh, yes. Him. Say it, Joanne.
I've been reading the most exciting book. It's called And She Be Fair. Have you read it?
Well, no, I'm not in the book of the month anymore. What was the name again?
And She Be Fair. It's from the Keats quotation, Forever Wilt Thou Love, And She Be Fair.
Oh, a love story, eh?
It's about Tchaikovsky and Madame von Meck. Do you know the story?
Tchaikovsky, the composer?
Yes. Surely you know about him and Nadia von Meck.
Nadia, oh, you bet.
The book gives a wonderful account of it. To me, it's one of the loveliest relationships I ever read about.
Oh, me too.
Between a man and a woman, I mean. Why can't all lives be as beautiful as that?
Joanne.
What?
Nothing.
I must go down to the sea again, to the lonely sea and the sky.
Joanne, I know I'm no... Tchaikovsky, but couldn't we... I mean, couldn't I... Well, it wouldn't be the same, of course, but...
You mean us?
Yes. Couldn't we have a sort of understanding?
You mean like Tchaikovsky and...
Well, I don't play the piano, of course, but you do.
We'd have to start by not seeing each other.
Well, that's the way you do it.
But we'd have to think about each other a great deal.
Oh, I do already.
And we'd have to write to each other every day.
Write?
That's what Tchaikovsky did... Well, I thought you knew the story.
Oh, I do. I'd forgotten some of the details.
You write me a letter telling me about your work.
Work? Well, I suppose there are some things I could say about it.
And then I write you a letter.
Great.
And it might help if every day at some agreed time...
How about 8 o'clock? 8 p.m.
All right. At 8 o'clock every evening, we think about each other.
Think?
The author says in this book, Tchaikovsky's music was really the flowering of their relationship... She was such an inspiration to him.
So are you.
On the other hand, Tchaikovsky meant everything to her. He had such fire, such nobility of spirit. He was so sensitive, yet so strong.
Skunk doing?
How would I know?
He's just sitting there thinking.
Stop spying on him.
I wasn't spying. I was just looking.
Maybe he's worried about something.
Yeah. If people are worried, they like to be alone sometimes.
But on the other hand, why would he want to worry for exactly 5 minutes? At exactly 8 o'clock?
Search me. He's goofy. At first, I thought he wanted to listen to the radio. Truman or somebody.
But why should he kick us out of the parlor just for that?
He does sometimes. Can't hear any radio. Hey, listen to that. Heck, if he's playing the piano, the 5 minutes must be up.
Yeah, I guess so.
Hi, Unc. Can we come back now?
Yes, you can come back. Thank you, children.
Well, that's okay. What the heck was the idea?
I wanted to be alone and think for a few minutes, that's all.
What's that you're trying to play? That old piece of Freddie Martin's?
My dear, Tchaikovsky.
Oh, yes. But nobody ever would have heard of it if it hadn't been for
Freddie. The melody is Tchaikovsky's. It's probably from one of his symphonies. Believe me, he didn't need Freddie Martin. Wish I could play it. Can you play it, Leroy? No, I don't suppose so.
Let's see. Four flats? Nah.
Bloody, bloody, dee, 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 dee.
Tchaikovsky, what melodies.
Unky, why this sudden craze for Tchaikovsky?
It's not a sudden craze. I've always liked the man. Do you know the story of Tchaikovsky's life? Fascinating. Did you hear about his love affair with what's her name?
No.
Well, they made history. Romeo and Juliet were a couple of pikers alongside of them.
Oh, really? What did they do?
Well, I don't know exactly, but it was a tremendous love affair, I can tell you that. Musician, you know. I wonder if they've got that book down at the library.
What book?
It's about Tchaikovsky and this what's her name? By George, I might just run down there.
You're certainly overboard for Tchaikovsky. You made me stop playing that Tchaikovsky record.
What Tchaikovsky record? Have you still got it?
Well, sure.
Marjorie, could you find it and play it for me, would you?
Poor Unky, he's really got it bad.
What's that?
I didn't say anything.
Tchaikovsky. What is the record?
Oh, here it is. The piano concerto.
Oh, I wish I'd known. I'd have played it at 8 o'clock. Well, tomorrow. What music. Listen to those chords.
Is that Freddie Martin?
No. It's Tchaikovsky. Anybody that could write that, he must have been a bear with a women. She.
I'm sorry. We don't seem to have a copy of it in. It's been quite popular.
Maybe I didn't have the right title.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's the title. And She Be Fair. It's about Tchaikovsky.
That's right. About him and Madame,
Madame Von Meck.
Madame Von Eve. Eve Goodwin. Well, how are you?
Shh. We're in a library.
Oh, well, I'm leaving. I haven't got the book I want. Thanks, just the same, ma'am.
I'm sorry, sir.
You leaving too, Eve?
I must say, Throckmorton, I'm a little surprised to find you at the library.
Oh, why should you be?
Oh, come now. And that book you were after, biography, what's come over you?
Well, it's a long story, Eve. If you're not doing anything...
I'd love to hear about it.
Well, anyway, that's how I got mixed up with... that's how I got to see this girl, and... And then this afternoon, we had this idea.
What?
Well, I'm glad it's you I'm telling this to. You won't laugh at me.
Why should I laugh at you?
Well, most people probably wouldn't be able to appreciate it. You're not like some women, Eve. You haven't any axe to grind.
Thank you.
Well, anyway, this afternoon, Joanne, was telling me about this terrific romance between Tchaikovsky and this Madame Von Meck.
Yes.
And the way I've been feeling about Joanne... I mean, gosh, I haven't dared to say boo to her about... Well, you know how it is when she's so young and everything. It isn't like talking to you, Eve.
You certainly haven't changed, Throckmorton.
I've lost 3 pounds, don't you notice?
You have?
Took them all off right here. And, well, anyway, I've been scared to say anything to her. And then suddenly we thought how it would be if, well, if she would be Madame von Meck and I would be Tchaikovsky. Cute idea?
Very.
And she said I should write her a couple of letters and kind of box around for a while, and then maybe it'll develop into one of the great relationships, she said. One of the great relationships of history. Well, you know, I'm not terribly musical. I sing a little, of course. But... Eve! I thought you'd understand.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to laugh.
Well, gosh, if you think it's so funny.
It isn't funny. Throckmorton, why do you persist in getting mixed up with literary girls? They always get you in trouble.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Do you know the story of Tchaikovsky and Madame von Meck?
Certainly.
Tell it to me.
Well, they had this terrific romance. I don't know every little thing about it.
There's just one little thing about it I think you ought to know before you get too excited.
What?
Well, I think this little encyclopedia will have it, if it's got Tchaikovsky at all.
No?
Here, this ought to give it.
Well, I don't see what you're getting at, Eve. This girl is so sweet, so open, and above board.
Well, of course. I just think maybe her ideas are a little young for you. Now, don't get excited. I don't mean that the way you think. let's see. Oh, here. Tchaikovsky. Born, educated, composed 120. Here it is. For 20 years, he maintained a curiously absorbing relationship with Madame Nadia von Meck, exchanging letters with her. But Tchaikovsky died without ever having seen her face to face.
Never met? Never laid eyes on her?
Never.
Well, by George, she can count me out. Musician.
The Great Gildersleeve will be back again very shortly.
Sergeant?
Yeah?
Can you tell me how I enlist in the Foreign Legion?
Sorry, bud. We got a long waiting list. Leave your name and address. We'll get in touch with you.
The Great Gildersleeve is played by Harold Perry. It is written by John Gwyden and Sam Moore. The music is by Jack Meekin. Included in the cast are Walter Tetley, Louise Erickson, Lillian Randolph, Shirley Mitchell, and Earl Ross. This is John Lang saying goodnight to the Kraft Foods Company, makers of the famous line of Kraft quality food products.
Good night, folks.
Listen in again next Wednesday for the further adventures of The Great Gildersleeve.
Good night again.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
And from the campus of Henry Ford College, we are WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. This is Radio Vault. Just finished off our first hour. Great Gildersleeve from April 30th of 47. And in just a matter of moments, we're going to take a listen to that hilarious Jack Benny episode called I Was Framed from right around this time in 1948, May 30th to be exact. And in case you're just joining us here on WHFR Dearborn, This show comes your way every Tuesday between 10 in the morning and 1 o'clock. And if you like the mysteries, join us for Sunday Night Mysteries here on WHFR. And that happens, well, obviously, Sunday night. From 9 o'clock in the p.m. until 12 midnight, we play all the mysteries and adventures. Sometimes the scary shows. Once in a while, we'll do Gunsmoke and other Western fare. That's on WHFR Sunday Night Mysteries. It all happens, of course, here on the station Making Waves. 89.3 WHFR. Jack Benny is coming up.
Find Highway 61, what you gotta do every Friday for the best in blues. 2 p.m. until 4 p.m. if you would please tune your radio in at 89.3 FM Detroit Blues and the best in new blues. Friday 2 p.m. streaming live at WHFR.FM. Henry Ford College broadcast with Highway 61 and DJ Kitty Love making waves.
Highway 61, the longest highway.
In 1945, the original care package inspired people around the world. Today, we're reaching 170 million people in over 110 countries. Because when history repeats itself, so does care. Join at care.org.
Earn your associate's degree in applied sciences with Henry Ford College's Automotive Technology Program. This program offers an in-depth study of multiple systems found in today's vehicles. HFC's Automotive Technology Program is fully certified by the National Institute for Automotive Technology Program by the ASE Educational Foundation. For more information on this or any other area of study, visit hfcc.edu today.
The Jack Benny Program. Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, we'd like to take you out to Jack Benny's home in Beverly Hills. It's evening, and Jack has just finished dinner and is relaxing in his usual way.
You know, Rochester, I always like to play my violin after dinner. No, it soothes and relaxes me. I hope it doesn't bother you.
Oh, no, I haven't had my dinner yet.
You know, Rochester, I often think what a fool I was not to have made the violin my career. You know, I might have become a great virtuoso, but no, instead I had to become a comedian, a clown, a buffoon.
But a rich buffoon.
That's the wrong attitude. The world would be better off if people had a different viewpoint. You know, money isn't everything. Remember what Shakespeare said. He who steals my purse steals trash.
I wish you'd throw some of that garbage on me.
Rod, just clear off the table. Let me practice my violin. I want to prepare for my stage appearances in Detroit and Cleveland. Let me see. I want to learn that new song first. Here it is. First again with tobacco men. Gee, that song is catching on fast. I heard it last night on the hit parade. Well, I've practiced enough, but I don't feel like going to bed. I think I'll go in the den and listen to the radio. Now, hello, Polly. Daddy's going to listen to the radio.
Fred Allen stinks. Fred Allen stinks.
Maybe I shouldn't have taught her that. But then, she'd have found out herself. Yeah, I wonder what's on the air right now.
Friends, do you have a tendency to be a little too fat around the waist? You do? Well, what you need is exercise. First, stand in front of your fireplace. That's right. Now lift your right leg higher, higher, higher. Now rest your foot on the mantelpiece. Have you got one foot on the floor and one foot on the mantelpiece? Good. We now leave the air until the same time tomorrow.
That's ridiculous. I wonder what else is on. Gee, it's hard to reach the dial with one foot on the mantelpiece. There, I made it.
This is Blanche Stewart, your daily beauty consultant. Ladies, is your skin rough and dry? Are your pores large and coarse? Is your complexion dull and blotchy? Is your hair stringy and full of snarls? It is? Well, stay in the house, kid. You're a mess.
I don't know. There must be something on the air tonight besides commercials. Oh, there's the phone. Hello?
Hello, Jack.
Oh, hello, Mary.
Jack, I'm going to have rehearsal at your house or NBC.
What?
Are we going to have rehearsal at your house or NBC?
Mary, I can hardly hear you. Get closer to the phone.
I can't. I've got one foot on the floor and one foot on the mantelpiece.
Gee, that program must have a terrific hooper. What do you think so, Ram? Oh, Mary, what did you ask me before?
I said, where are we having rehearsal?
Oh, rehearsal will be tomorrow at NBC.
Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, say, Jack.
Yes?
I've got the most wonderful news. My sister Babe is coming out to California to go on television.
Your sister Babe on television? Well, what is she going to do?
She's going to double for Gorgeous George.
Say, that's great. Listen, give her my congratulations.
Oh, hello, Jack. Rochester told me you were in here.
Oh, hello, Don. Mary, Don's here. I got to hang up. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hiya, Don. Come on in. Sit down.
Okay. Come on in, fellas.
Oh, you brought the sportsman with you. Hello, boys. Don, I meant to call you, but we're not having rehearsal until tomorrow. As long as you're here, sit down.
Well, thanks, Jack. Aren't you going to sit down, too?
No, I'll just put my foot back on the mantelpiece.
Well, Jack, even though we're not rehearsing until tomorrow, the boys have prepared a beautiful number for the show, and they'd like to have you hear it right now. They're going out of town for a few days.
Business?
Oh, no. You see, the boys took their wives fishing at Big Bear Lake last week, and they're going back there again.
Gee, I wish I could go. What are they going to fish for, perch or trout?
The baritone's wife. She fell out of the boat Wednesday.
Well, then, by all means, let's hear him sing now. She must be awfully tired treading water. Go ahead, boys.
Well, now, wait a minute, Jack. This is a big production number, and there's a part in it for you on the violin.
For me? Well, good. Now, where's my violin?
Under your chin.
Oh, yes. That was the stickiest spaghetti I had for dinner. Now, let's go, Don. What number are we going to do?
The Saber Dance by Cacciatorium.
The Saber Dance? Well, that should be wonderful. Come on, fellas, hit it.
So for your role
is one important thing, as you may guess. Quality of product is essential to continuing success.
Don,
yeah.
Don, congratulations. Ray, that was a wonderful number.
Well, thanks, Jack. I knew you'd like it.
I certainly did. We'll see you Sunday, fellas. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm. So long, Jack.
So long. Gosh, those boys are such nice fellas. 65 cents on the Coca-Cola machine. Well, I think I'll take my change belt off and go in the library. I'll read for an hour or so before I go to bed. Just look at this room. What a mess. Oh, Rochester! Rochester! Every time I want him, he takes so long to
get... Did you call me, Mr. Billy?
Yeah, where were you?
I was in the kitchen ironing your nightgown.
Well, I hope you didn't put too much starch in it again. Last night, I felt like I was sleeping in a Quonset hut. I like a nightgown to cling a little. Now, Rochester, this room is such a mess. I wish... Rochester, do you smell something burning?
Uh-oh, the iron!
My nightgown! Well, is it burnt?
Boy, something tells me this Quonset hut is going to have a window in it.
Let me see that nightgown.
It'll be okay, boss. I'll put a flap on it.
See that you do. I'm going back in the library and read. I'll call you, Rochester, when I want to go to bed. Now, let me see. I'd like to read a good mystery for a change. What are these books? Kiss the Blood Off My Hand. The Crushed Skull. The Mutilated Torso. Lilacs in the Spring. Nah, that's too gruesome. Let's see. Oh, my goodness. These two books shouldn't be together. The Proper Bostonians and the Kinsey Report. Here's a mystery I haven't read. I Was Framed by the author of I Stand Condemned. Gee, his new book ought to be good. I'll just curl up in this easy chair and read it. Chapter 1. I Was Framed.
My name is Bruce Fink. Oh, it's an ordinary name. It hasn't even been mentioned as a Republican candidate. I was an average man with normal habits. My only fault was, perhaps, that I spent my money a little too freely.
Gee.
It all started one evening last April. We had just finished dinner, and I was in the kitchen washing the dishes. My wife, Flossie, was in the parlor dancing with our boarder, Silk Shirt Harry. I also had a son named Gus. Some people thought he was stupid because he was 16 years old, and he had just learned to tie his shoelaces. Someday he may even learn to tie them when they're in his shoes. But I loved him. That evening, Gus was helping me with the dishes.
What's this, Papa?
That's a cup, son.
Oh, and is this a saucer?
No, that's a knife. Saucer knife. Saucer knife. Saucer knife. Have you got that, son?
Son?
Yes, you're my son and I'm your father. This is a cup and this is the knife. The one with the point is the knife. The one with the handle is the cup. And the one with the hole is your head. Now, do you understand?
Yes, son.
No. No, look, look, you're the son. You see, I'm your father. But don't try to learn too much at one time.
All right, I'll go to bed now.
Good night, my boy.
Good night, Papa. Oh, Papa.
Yes, son?
Papa, when are you going to tell me about the birds and the bees?
Don't worry about the birds and the bees. First learn about the cups and the saucers. They enjoy life, too. Good night, Gus.
Good night, Papa.
Gus called me Papa. And I was glad that I made the right decision. 2 days before, I almost traded him for a Cocker Spaniel. I put away the dishes and started toward the parlor to join my wife, Flossie, and our boarder, Silk Shirt Harry.
Ah, swing it, Flossie, you little dove, you.
I'm way ahead of you, Harry.
Hey, honey, let's try that dip again.
Oh, you sure got a mean run.
That's nothing, baby. You ought to catch me on linoleum.
Oh, Harry, hold me closer. I love to smell that bay rum.
I know, baby. That's why I drink it straight.
Mind if I cut in, sweetheart?
Are you finished with the dishes already?
Oh, yes. They're all washed and put away.
Look, Fink. Flossie and I are busy. Here's a dime. Why don't you run down to the store?
What do you want me to get?
Lost.
I walked out of the house smiling at Flossie's little joke. Then I was horrified to see our son Gus lying on the front lawn with a broken leg. I know what had happened. When he went up to his room, he stepped out on the balcony to get some fresh air. If I told him once, I told him 1,000 times. We haven't got a balcony. As I bent over him, Gus opened his eyes and said,
"What happened, son?"
"No, no, no, you're the son. I'm your father."
"Oh.
Tell me, are you hurt?"
"Yes, I think I broke my saucer."
"That's your leg."
As I walked down the street toward the corner store, I couldn't help thinking how lucky I was. I had a wonderful wife, a son with a broken saucer, and a boarder who had his own show and went off the air for the summer. What man could ask for more? Although I had never cared for riches, I did wish that I could afford to buy my wife, Flossie, the little extra thing she never had before, like toothpaste, a toothbrush, or even tea. I continued walking down the street when suddenly a voice called to me from the darkened doorway of the First National Bank.
"Hey, you. You."
"Who, me?"
"Yeah, you. Come here. You want to make 50 bucks?
Without even thinking, I said no, which proves I wasn't thinking. So I thought it over and said,
"Did you say 50 bucks?
"Yeah. All you gotta do is stand out here in front of the bank, and if you see a cop, just whistle."
"Whistle?"
"Yeah. Whistle something like Melancholy Baby or Ballerina. Any popular number."
"If you don't mind, I'd like to whistle Stardust. I'm a friend of Hugo Carmichael."
"Whistle Ballerina. And when you see a cop coming, whistle loud so me and my friend can hear you."
They weren't fooling me. I knew they were song pluggers. I stood in front of the bank thinking of the $50 I was going to make. To me, that was a fortune. The nearest I ever came to being rich was when I almost guessed the name of the walking man. I was so sure it was Frank Remley. He fell off his stool for the summer. I stood there lost in thought when suddenly from inside of the bank, I heard... Bank now had an open-toed vault. The next thing I knew, I was in a speeding car seated between two men and three sacks of money. Then suddenly it dawned upon me. This was a holdup. The rest of that ride was like a nightmare. Then the two men began to talk.
Hey, Clyde. How much did you promise this Fink?
They knew my name. I looked at the men, and I looked at their guns. I noticed the guns were identical. So I asked them why they both carried .32 caliber automatics. And they said...
They're first again with hold-up men.
I knew what they meant, but I missed the music. I leered back at them and said...
You fellas can't get away with this. I'm going to the police.
You can't go to the police, buddy. You're in this as deep as we are.
I knew that the two men were right. I was trapped. Through no fault of my own, I, Bruce Criminal, was now a Fink. I mean, Bruce Fink was now a criminal. As I rode along with the three sacks of money, the car stopped at a corner. The men picked up two more sacks. One was Saks Fifth Avenue. The car was now so crowded I had to sit in the back with the escalator. Finally, they threw me out of the car. By the time I got home, it was morning. A dreary morning. I looked up at the sky. Suddenly, the sun broke through the O in Honest John. Through the window, I could see Silk Shirt Harry holding my wife Flossie in his arms. Their lips were pressed together. I dreaded going into the house. I'd been gone all night, and I couldn't tell them where I'd been. I didn't want Flossie to think that I was in love with another woman. I racked my brain, but I couldn't think of an excuse. So I decided to go in and brazen it out. As I opened the door, they were still kissing. As they saw me, their lips parted.
Hello, Harry. Hello, Flossie.
Are you back already?
I know how you must have worried about me, darling, but I couldn't help it. I bumped into an old friend and we got to talking. And you know how time always...
Kiss me again, Harry.
Okay, baby.
It was as simple as that. No questions, no jealous reproaches. Flossie trusted me implicitly. I think Harry did, too. I was heartsick as I went upstairs and threw myself on Gus's bed and knocked my pivot tooth out. I told him once, I told him 1,000 times. He hasn't got a bed. The next couple of weeks were like a horrible dream. I didn't know what the future had in store for me. I continued with my household duties. One day, as I was pushing bugs out of the screen with a toothpick, my son Gus was sitting nearby doing his homework. He looked up at me and said,
"Oh, fathead."
That's father. At least you're getting closer. What is it, son?
This pencil won't write.
That's a knife. Look, son, that's a knife. This is a cup, and this is a saucer. Do you understand?
Yes, son.
No. I'm your father. Now, how are you getting along with your spelling?
Fine. I can count up to 10 now.
Good work. Now, listen, my boy. I'm going to take you into my confidence. Some men were robbing a bank, and they promised me $50 to whistle if I saw a cop.
A what?
A cop.
That's a saucer.
I left Gus sitting in a pool of blood. I couldn't stand him anymore. As I walked into the kitchen, the phone rang. A shiver went down my back. Then it went up my back. Then it went down my back. The escalator was under my coat. The phone rang again.
Hello?
Hello, Fink. We're pulling another job tonight, and we want you to whistle for us. And you better be there if you know what's good for you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I'll be there.
I thought of running away. I thought of leaving town. I thought of Jane Russell. I don't know why I thought of her, but it was fun. But when the burglars called, I knew I'd be there. This meant I'd have to leave the house again. But I didn't know how to break the news to my wife. I hoped she wouldn't take it too hard. I opened the door and walked into the parlor where I found Flossie and Harry looking at our picture album.
Look at this one, Harry. This is a picture of me and my husband, Bruce, the night we first met.
Yeah.
Hey, who's the other guy in the picture?
That's Ralph Edwards. He introduced me to Bruce as part of my consequence.
Flossie, dear, I have to go out again tonight, and I may not be home until late.
And look, Carrie, here's a picture we took on our honeymoon. This is Bruce in his bathing suit.
Holy mackerel, what a physique. He looks like something that was pushed through a screen with a toothpick.
Oh, I don't blame you for being furious, Flossie. But you'll have to trust me. And remember, no matter what happens, I want you to know that I love you. Well, I gotta go now. Goodbye, Harry. Goodbye, Flossie.
How about a kiss?
Not wanting to interrupt them, I tiptoed out of the room. Once again, I walked out into the night to keep a rendezvous with destiny. That night, while I whistled, they robbed the Second National Bank. The next night, they robbed the Third National Bank. The night after that, the Fourth National. And the following night, the Sixth National. Everyone was expecting it to be the Fifth. Oh, they were shrewd, all right. And then... it happened. The crooks decided I outlived my usefulness. They took me to a lonely road to bump me off. And I stood there helpless. They came at me with their guns drawn. I tried to get away, but it was no use. I was cornered, trapped. I screamed for help. Suddenly, from out of nowhere, police cars appeared. Dozens of cops jumped out. I thought I was saved, but no, they thought I was one of the crooks, and they started firing. I was hit in the arm, in the leg. I sank to my knees when suddenly...
The last page of this book is missing. Wait, quite a few pages are gone. Oh, Rochester! Rochester!
Did you call me, boss? Yeah.
What happened to this book? There were about a dozen pages torn out of it.
You did that last week when you had your dinner party.
What?
If I told you once, I told you 1,000 times, buy paper napkins!
Well, if you got the flap on my nightgown, I think I'll go to bed. Good night, Rochester.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you agree that there is nothing more pathetic than a helpless child suffering from starvation, exposure, and sickness. Thousands of kids in the devastated countries are exactly in this predicament. So it's up to us to give them a chance to survive. We must help them grow up and be healthy, clear-thinking citizens. So let's help those unfortunate children by sending our contributions to Crusade for Children, New York City. Save a child, save the future. Thank you. Jack, we'll be back in just a minute, but first...
Gee, it feels good to get in bed. I'm really tired tonight.
Oh, darn it, there's the buzzer. No, no, who can that be at this hour, I wonder? Yes?
Mr. Benny, if I told you once, I told you 1,000 times.
What is it?
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Light from the Underground is a radio show filled with musical surprises. You'll get a chance to hear new music, often artists you aren't familiar with, and we might even mix in some classics that you haven't thought of in years. I'm Bill Keith, and I enjoy digging through all the music we've received to spotlight the best music I can find. I focus on singer-songwriters across a wide variety of genres. Add in some blues or Americana, maybe a bit of gospel music, and some indie rock to mix things up. And you have Light from the Underground. Thanks to Henry Ford College for making WUHFR possible. Their investment allows us to create radio that's focused on Dearborn and the greater Detroit area. And thank you for being a loyal listener. Check out Light from the Underground Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 89.3 WUHFR.FM. We're making waves.
I knew there was a better career out there for me, but I couldn't afford to quit my job to get the necessary education. Thanks to Henry Ford College, I didn't have to. In just 2 years, I earned my associate's degree and was ready to start a new career in the industry I love. I work hard for myself and for my family, and I've earned the chance to advance in my job and in my life. Henry Ford gave me that chance. I'm a Henry Ford College graduate, and I'm future-driven.
Henry Ford College. Future-driven.
The Jack Benny Program.
Jack Benny with Barry Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Tonight we're broadcasting from Detroit, Michigan, the automobile capital of the world. But yesterday they raised the prices of new automobiles, so today we bring you the walking man, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, you're right, I haven't got a new car, but it's not that I haven't tried. You see, there's still an awful shortage.
Oh, that's right, Jack, it's almost impossible to get a new car.
You're not kidding, Don. This morning I saw Kaiser and Fraser, they were both riding bicycles. And that hyphen between their name was on roller skates. But gee, I'd give anything to pick up a new car here.
Well, Jack, I'm quite sure I can help you get one.
How?
Well, I don't like to brag, but I carry quite a bit of weight in this town.
Well, I wish you... Don, would you mind repeating that?
I said, I carry quite a bit of weight in this town.
Don, you carry... No, I won't say it. I won't say it. No, we were number one in the Hooper last week. Why take any chances? Anyway, Don, thanks for offering to help me, but I'm not sure I'd like to get one of the latest model cars. They're so revolutionary. You know, no cranks in front or anything. Really. And another thing, they've made so many radical changes in the designs. Have you seen the rear end of the new Cadillac?
Yes, why?
It looks like two salmon swimming upstream to spawn. Believe me.
Well, anyway, Jack, I'm glad we finally took this trip to Detroit. You know, I've needed a new car for 3 years, and I'm going to get it now.
Well, Don, if you needed a car so badly, why didn't you get it back in Hollywood? I mean, why did you have to come to Detroit?
For a fitting.
Yes, I forgot. You do need a new car. Your old one is a little tight around the luggage compartment. Maybe you can let out the fenders, you see. Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack, Don. Hello, everybody.
Well, well, Mary, how do you like it here?
Huh? Oh, wonderful, Jack. Simply wonderful. To me, Detroit is one of the greatest cities in America.
Well, you really do like it here, huh, Mary?
Yes, Don, I love Detroit. First city of Michigan, first in automobile production, and fourth in the American League.
Hey, Mary, I didn't know you were interested in baseball.
Well, I am. And, Jack, the other day I went out to Briggs Field, and I've got some bad news for you.
What is it?
Greenberg isn't on third anymore.
I must tell my writers, they think Ty Cobb is still out in left field.
Mary, have you seen many other things here in town?
Oh, yes, Don. One of the places I visited was the Ford factory. You know, Ford sponsors Fred Allen.
Gee, I can't understand it. A progressive company like Ford going back to the Model T. And why should he be on the air for Ford anyway? With that receding forehead, he looks like a Studebaker.
Picking on Fred and admit that he's a very good comedian.
Oh, he is, Mary. He's a very good comedian. Yeah, but I don't think that Fred should be on the air for an automobile. Fred should be sponsored by a ball-bearing company.
Why?
Because every time I hear him, my stomach turns. Now, let's stop talking about him.
Okay. Anyway, Jack, yesterday I went out to the soda plant and I met the cutest engineer. I went out with him last night.
At the soda plant? Did you have fun?
Yeah. But you know, it seems that everyone around here is always thinking and talking in terms of automobiles.
What do you mean, Mary?
Well, this fellow took me out in the park and we sat down on a bench in a dark corner. Then he looked into my eyes and said, "Honey, do you know you have the nicest, shiniest pair of headlights I've ever seen?"
No.
Yes. Then he looked at my lips and told me I had a great paint job.
What technique?
And then he put his finger on my nose, pushed a little, and was awfully disappointed when my hat didn't go up.
Gee.
Then he kissed me and it did.
Well, he kissed you. Serves you right going out with a strange man.
Oh, Jack, I was properly introduced to him. And anyway, the only reason I went out with him is because I thought he might help me get a new DeSoto. No such luck.
Well, say, Mary, maybe I can help you get a car here in Detroit.
Oh, Don, that would be wonderful. Do you think you can do anything?
Certainly. I carry quite a bit of weight in this town.
Well, Don, I'd like... Wait a minute. Would you mind repeating that?
I said, I carry quite a bit of weight in this town.
Don, you carry so much... No, I won't say it. I won't say it. May be listening in. He's looking for an excuse to evict me.
Mary, I want to commend you on your good taste. You know, I had the same opportunity and... Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello, Mr. Benny. Hello, everybody.
Gee, I'm glad you made it on time, kid. You know, I haven't seen you since we arrived in Detroit.
Well, that's right, Dennis. What have you been doing with yourself?
Oh, I've been spending most of my time in my hotel room.
Have you got a nice place?
Oh, it's all right. I got a room with hot and cold running.
Hot and cold running water?
I don't know. There isn't any bathroom.
Dennis, you mean you're staying in a room with no water?
Uh-huh.
Well, what do you do when you need a bath?
Keep away from people.
You take him, Don. Somehow he seems to tire me.
Okay, tell me, Dennis, are you staying at the Book Cadillac Hotel?
Oh, no, that's too expensive for me.
Well, where are you staying?
At the Book Chevrolet.
Now cut that out! Now, instead of all that silly talk, let's have your song.
Okay.
Now go ahead and... Oh, hold it, Dennis. Come in. Oh, Donna, we were supposed to have an interruption here, but we left the actor in Hollywood. Sing, Dennis. Go ahead.
Mother's Day, Mama Kushla.
singing his latest RCA Victor recording, Mama McCutchlin. Very good, Dennis. By the way, kid, I meant to ask you, how'd you like the train trip from Hollywood to Detroit?
Not so good. I shared a compartment with Phil Harris and I couldn't sleep a wink.
You mean Phil kept you awake?
Oh, no, I had the upper berth and it was awfully uncomfortable. I could hardly move in it. I didn't get any sleep at all and I tried everything. I even went to bed early.
Well, what time did you have the porter put your berth down?
Oh, down!
Been pretty tired on the train, Dennis.
I was. I'd wake up in the morning and my eyes would be just as red as Phil's, and I didn't have half the fun.
Well, kid, I hope you're getting enough sleep now that you're here in Detroit.
No, I'm in a pretty terrible hotel. I'd like to get rooms at a decent place, but they're all booked up. Could you help me get a room, Mr. Benny?
Well, I don't think so. I don't know many people here in Detroit.
Well, now, perhaps I can help you, Dennis. I carry quite a bit of weight in this town.
Gee, that would be... Would you mind saying that again?
I said, I carry quite a bit of weight in this town.
You carry so much... No, I won't say it. I won't say it. I have another show in Hollywood, and I wanted to be there when I get back.
That's the first sensible thing you've said today, kid. You know, if you would just... Come in.
Hello, Mr. Benny Boy.
Well, if it isn't Mr. Kitzel. Mr. Kitzel, what are you doing here in Detroit?
Well, I came here to show something to the automobile manufacturers. I have the most wonderful automobile.
Really?
Yes, it runs on the ground, it runs under the water, it flies through the air, it even climbs up trees.
Gee, that's wonderful. When did you get an automobile like that?
I always had it, but I never knew it would do all those things till my wife drove it.
Oh. Oh, I see. Is it a brand new car, Mr. Kitzel?
No, just it's an old car. It's a Rolls Canardly.
A Rolls Canardly?
Yes, it rolls down one hill and can hardly get up the next.
Oh, now, Mr. Kitzel.
Oh, excuse me, that's a joke I heard on the radio on the Ozzie and Horowitz program.
Well, that's Ozzie and Harriet. Well, Mr. Kitzel, are you leaving town right away?
No. I'm thinking of staying here and playing with the Detroit Tigers.
You're going to play with the Detroit Tigers. Why?
Who knows? Maybe 10 men will help.
Now, wait a minute. Now, wait a minute, Mr. Kitzel. You see, every baseball team has its off days. Ooh. That's why they're starting to play here at night, you see? Mr. Kitzel, before you leave town, I want you to come over and see my stage show. You know, we're playing here at the Fox Theater this week. Phil Harris, Rochester, the Sportsman Quartet, and Marilyn Maxwell.
Yeah, I know. I saw it the first day I got into town. And that Marilyn Maxwell, if you'll pardon the expression,
Oh, she certainly is beautiful, isn't she?
Yes, and what a shape. This is the first Maxwell I ever saw with a body by Fisher.
Appreciate the compliment, Mr. Kitzel. I'll tell her when I see her. It was nice of you to drop in to see my stage show.
Well, I've seen it 9 times already since I arrived here in town.
Well, 9 times.
Yes, tonight I hope I can get a room.
Well, maybe after the show I can help you, Mr. Kitzel.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Benny Boy. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Kitzel. Kids, let's finish the show and get back.
Oh, say, Jack, before you go any further, I wondered if you'd mind letting the quartet do their number now.
Oh, yes, the Sportsman. Hello, fellas.
Jack, the quartet's going to Cleveland with you, aren't they?
Yes, we open at the Palace Theater in Cleveland Friday.
Well, Jack, they want to know if they can leave right after your Cleveland engagement. You see, they've got to go to Philadelphia to sing at the Republican convention.
Well, how come they're only singing at the Republican convention?
The Democrats have Margaret.
Is that all? They're going going to do?
No.
Is that the order going for?
No, no, they're going to be delegates, too.
Delegates? Well, that's interesting. Who are they going to vote for?
Say, I never thought to ask them. Say, fellas, who are you going to vote for?
The man that we'll vote for is F.D. Boone.
Fellas, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Boy. I mean, how can you let them do that to me?
Well, Jack, it's your own fault that the quartet upset you. Why'd you bring them along on the trip?
Anytime I can get four of anything for the price of one, I take it. That's why I hired you, too. Now, come on, let's...
Say, Jack.
What?
I meant to ask you, are you getting a straight salary at the Fox Theater, or are you working on a percentage?
Well, I get a percentage on every ticket that's sold. Why?
Well, while the boys were singing, this note came to you from the manager of the theater.
What does it say?
It says, Dear Jack, you were right. The total attendance yesterday was 22,307 instead of 22,306. How you can count with that spotlight in your eyes, I'll never know.
Of course I was right. I only made one mistake since I've been here, and that wasn't my fault. There was a man sitting in the fifth row of the balcony with two heads. One of them was asleep on his own shoulder. Imagine us writing that without George, huh, fellas? You know, Mary, counting the house is one of the first things I've ever learned.
So far, folks, this show has smelled, but now Harris is here, and I'm jet-propelled.
Gentlemen, for the benefit of the few of you who haven't been blown out of your seats, this is Whispering Jack Smith. Hello, Phil.
Ah, hiya, Jackson. Dennis. Ah, hello, Livy. Lovely Livy. Oh, look at that streamlined chassis with those beautiful accessories.
Oh, Phil, I know it's silly to ask you, but have you been enjoying yourself here?
Love it, Livy, love it. You know, Detroit's a great town, and just think. This big city, all these millions of people, all these big factories, these thousands of workers. None of them would have been here today if Marconi hadn't invented the automobile.
Phil, for your information, Marconi didn't invent the auto. He invented radio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Imagine me making a mistake like that when I know so much about inventors.
Oh, fine.
Well, if you don't believe me, go ahead. Ask me any question you want to about them inventors.
Okay, who invented the electric light?
Edison.
Hmm, pretty good. Who invented the telegraph?
Morse.
Hey, that's right. Who invented the cotton gin?
Gordon.
I know it. I know it. I know it couldn't last.
Well, listen, Jackson, if you think that's bad, you should hear what Remley did. He's been waiting for years to come here and get a car so it would be FOB Detroit.
What's wrong with that?
He thinks FOB means full old bourbon. Oh, Harris, you're just like the new Oldsmobile, beautiful but shiftless.
Well, you can save those jokes for our stage show. If the people don't like them there, you know, they can walk out. Here, we got them trapped.
Hey, wait a minute. That reminds me. Look, Jackson, I got a squawk about my billing coming at that theater.
Why, what's the matter, Phil?
Plenty's the matter. I took pictures of the marquee and my name ain't even on it. Now, here, look.
Let's see, Fox Theater now showing Jack Benny and... Oh, for heaven's sake, Phil. Look, here it is, right on the second line. P-H-I-L-H-A-R-R-I-S. Phil Harris.
Oh, is that what that spells?
And while we're talking about...
Say, Mr. Benny, you want to see something funny?
Huh?
Put your finger on my nose and push.
What?
Put your finger on my nose and push.
Okay, there. Dennis, what happened?
Yesterday I was going through one of the automobile factories and my head got caught in the assembly line.
Well, all go sit down.
Okay.
And stop pulling your ear.
I'm turning my lights off.
Oh, be quiet. Now, Phil, getting back to our vaudeville show, I got a couple of complaints to make, too.
Such as what?
Such as when you do that love scene with Marilyn Maxwell. When you kiss her, why do you have to kiss her so long?
Listen, Jackson, you ain't paying the girl nothing. Let her have some fun.
You think kissing you was fun, huh?
Certainly. You don't think I hung on to Alice with just my lousy music.
No, no. Well, look, Phil, let's not discuss your love life. I'm talking about our vaudeville show. Another thing, I don't like the way you deliver some of your jokes. You're pressing too hard.
Okay. I'll watch it, Jackson. You know more about that than I do.
And don't make such a slow exit after your number. Get off the stage fast. It'll help your applause. You see?
Okay, I will. You know more about those things than I do.
And another thing, I think your tempo is much too fast when you sing, "That's What I Like About the..."
Now, hold it, Dad. Hold it.
Huh?
I don't mind you telling me how to deliver jokes.
Look, Phil.
And I don't mind you telling me how to make an exit.
Phil.
But telling me how to sing, "That's What I Like About the South," is like Henry Aldrich telling Dr. Kinsey about the birds and bees.
To offend you.
Anyway, Jack's right, Phil. I don't think your band sounds good.
Well, I know it don't, but it ain't my fault, Liv. That theater has an awful piano. We'd sound a lot better if it had a good one.
Well, I'm sorry, Phil. I can't help you there.
Well, maybe Don can help me. Hey, Donzie, can you help me? You carry quite a bit of weight in this town.
Yes, I, Hey, wait a minute, Phil. Would you mind repeating that?
I said, you carry quite a bit of weight in this town.
I sure do, Phil, especially around my suburbs. Wilson, you may take up half the stage, but you're worth it.
Yes. Well, Don, you finally got your little fat joke in, didn't you? Are you happy now? Huh? Oh, there's the phone. I'll get it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny. This is Rochester.
Hello, Rochester. What'd you call for?
Well, I've got some bad news for you.
What is it?
I'm at the hotel and one of your trunks is missing. There are only two here.
Oh, my goodness. Which one of the trunks was lost? The one with the strap around her or the one with the rope?
The one with the scotch tape.
Well, what have you done about it?
Well, I called your insurance company and the adjuster is here now. I'm giving him a list of the things that were lost. First, your blonde toupee with the cowlick.
My blonde toupee? Well, I've got two like that. Which one do you mean?
The one that makes you look like an aging Van Johnson.
Oh, gee, that was my Saturday night one.
I know, boss. And I'm charging them $30 for it.
Well, wait a minute, Rochester. That toupee only cost me $3.
That's what the bait cost, but look at the time you spent trapping it.
Well, I consider that a sport. Now, what else was lost, Rochester?
One electric iron, soap, starch, bluing, and laundry tickets.
Gee, that's too bad.
Well, boss, I'm kind of glad we lost all that laundry stuff, especially now that we're traveling and have no washing machine.
Why?
I get awful tired sitting in a bathtub full of clothes and kicking my feet.
Well, that's good exercise, Rochester. Wait a minute. I hope we didn't lose the trunk that had my violin in it.
That was it, boss. And the man is allowing you $12 for that.
$12? Rochester, the violin bow alone is worth $12. The horsehair in it came from Whirlaway.
I told him that.
What did he say?
He said he wouldn't give me $12 for that bow if Whirlaway was still attached to it, Eddie R. Carroll was riding it, and it was 5 lengths ahead in the Kentucky Derby.
Well, what did he say about my violin?
Oh, he wasn't original at all.
Well, I'll take that up with the insurance adjuster myself, and I'll see you later. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, say, boss.
Now what?
Would it be all right if I took the night off? I'm kind of anxious to go over to Canada.
Well, I guess it'll be all right, Rochester. It is a pleasant drive across the Ambassador Bridge.
Oh, I'm not going across the bridge. I'm going through the tunnel.
Tunnel? Is there a tunnel under the Detroit River?
Yeah, during Prohibition, Phil Harris dug it with his bare hands.
Remember, he bit his way through the last 2 miles of it. Goodbye, Rochester.
Goodbye.
I never saw anybody like Rochester. Every time I leave town, he loses something.
but first...
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank everybody for being so nice to us here in Detroit, and we'll be at the Fox Theater till Wednesday.
So come in and let Jack count you.
Yeah. And we hope to see all our friends in Cleveland when we open at the Palace Theater Friday. And next Sunday, we'll be broadcasting from the Carter Hotel in Cleveland, Ohio. Now, let's see. What else?
Oh, Jack, a note just came from your room clerk at the hotel where you're staying.
The room clerk? What does it say?
It says that, "Dear Mr. Benny, I took the matter up with the manager, and he says the price of your room cannot be reduced as no one asks you to launder the bed linen yourself." However, we're curious to find out why every piece of your linen has Rochester's footprints on it.
Gee, I told Rochester he was kicking too hard. In Cleveland, I'll make him wear socks.
Good night, folks.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Oh, boy, there you have it. The Jack Benny Show from June 13, 1948. That was the show from Detroit. And we've got one more Benny Show before we wrap it up today. Don't forget 1 o'clock. Our friend Andy Parks comes your way with Strictly Gospel. So be sure to hang around for that. In the meantime, between time, we're going to work our way toward our last feature, which is going to be a little-known series called The Planet Man, kind of scorned by old-time radio fans of today. But nonetheless, kind of entertaining from 1952. That'll be our last feature for today, The Planet Man. But before we get there, we're going to bring you one more Jack Benny. Coming up on 89.3 WHFR Dearborn from the campus of Henry Ford College.
Hey, I'm the jumper, the one who wrote that Trailways bus out of Louisiana. Now I'm on that blues plane doing my thing all the way up 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at night on WHFR 89.3 each and every Wednesday night. Well, hey, you want to stop in and have some fun? We got blues you can use right here on WHFR 89.3 Dearborn.
I've been downhearted, baby. Ever since the day we met.
Every 36 seconds, a vehicle is stolen in the United States. Cars are an important investment, and you have the power to protect it. Remove valuables from your car or place out of view. Roll up your windows completely. Don't leave your car running while unattended, especially during the winter. And always lock your doors and take your keys or fob with you. If you know something about a vehicle theft, call us at 1-800-TEL-NICB.
This is a public service message from the National Insurance Crime Bureau.
Listener supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
The Jack Benny Program. Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Gentlemen, it is usually our custom to take you to Jack Benny's home in Beverly Hills. But at the moment, Jack is taking a bath, so we'll take you to Mary Livingston's house instead.
Oh, Pauline.
Yes, Miss Livingston?
You can have the rest of the evening off. I have a date tonight. We may go to a movie.
Oh, that's nice.
Or we may go to a nightclub.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I'm going with Mr. Benny.
Oh.
I know what you mean, Pauline, but I haven't been out with Mr. Benny since we got back from Europe.
Gee, I'll bet your trip to England would have been a complete fizzle if it hadn't been for Phil Harris.
You still have a crush on Phil, haven't you, Pauline?
Uh-huh. Did you get to act with Mr. Harris at the Palladium?
Yes, we did one sketch together, and at the end of the scene, he kissed me.
Oh, tell me, Miss Livingston, what's it like when Phil Harris kisses you?
It's like being slapped in the face with a bar rag.
Hello, Miss Livingston's residence.
May I speak to Miss Livingston, please? This is Barbara Stanwyck.
Just a minute, please. Miss Livingston, it's Miss Stanwyck.
Oh, thank you, Pauline. Hello, Barbara.
Hello, Mary. I called you because Bob has a conference at the studio tonight, and I'm having a few girls over for bridge. Would you like to join us?
Oh, I'd love to, Barbara. But I promised Jack I'd go out with him tonight.
Oh, then you're going to see my picture. Sorry, wrong number.
Well, how do you know?
Jack just called me for passes. Yes, and tomorrow night, Jack's taking you to see Loves of Carmen.
Well, what makes you so sure?
He asked me for Rita Hayworth's phone number.
Oh. No wonder I've never seen any of Lassie's pictures. She hasn't got a phone. Anyway, Barbara, you shouldn't have given Jack those passes.
Well, I was going to turn him down, but when he came over to pick them up, he said he'd tell a joke on his program, plugging my picture.
Oh, fine. Did he tell you the joke?
Yes. It was a dilly about two termites who get indigestion from eating bad wood. Sorry, wrong lumber.
If he tells that gag in the program, I'll punch him right in the nose.
I already did. You know, Mary, Jack can be so corny. I can't understand why you go out with him all the time.
Oh, he isn't so bad, Barbara. I'll admit Jack may not be the handsomest man in the world, but he's not the homeliest.
Well, no.
He may not be the wittiest, but he's not the dullest.
No, I guess not.
And he may not be the most generous, but...
Shall we dance?
Barbara, Jack isn't so bad.
No, I guess you're right, Mary. He did bring Bob a nice present from Paris. A beautiful, bright yellow beret.
A yellow beret?
Yeah, Bob wore it yesterday at the studio.
Oh, I bet it was a riot.
No, but it started one.
What happened?
Phone or no phone, Lassie chased him up a tree.
Well, imagine giving Bob a beret. Say, Barbara, did Jack bring you anything from Europe?
No, but I'm awfully glad he's back.
You are?
Nobody can do rough dry like he does.
Well, you can thank me, too. I help on my days off.
Well, I'm sorry you can't come over tonight, Mary, but I hope you like my picture.
Oh, I'm sure I will. And maybe we can get together next week. Goodbye, Barbara.
Bye.
Well, I'm all ready to go to the movies. Have me my umbrella, will you, Pauline?
Miss Livingston, it stopped raining.
I know, but you've never sat next to Mr. Benny when he's eating popcorn. Well, he should be here in a few minutes.
Here's your dessert, Mr. Benny.
Ah, strawberry shortcake with whipped cream.
You better eat it fast or you'll be late for the movies.
I know. Rogers, look at me. Do you think I need a shave?
Well, yes and no.
What do you mean, yes and no?
After the movies, if you take Miss Livingston home, by the way, at Wilshire Boulevard, no. Griffith Park, yes.
I'm not going by way of Griffith Park. My car's too old for that. Well... I'm almost through eating.
Say, boss, before you leave, I better put a patch over that slow leak in your rubber cushion.
Why?
Last time you went to the movies, you kept sinking lower and lower, and Miss Livingston thought you were unhappy with the picture.
Oh, yeah. Well, put a piece of adhesive on the leak or some scotch tape. I mean, fix it up any old way.
Any old way?
Rochester. Rochester, that echo again. Didn't you hear it?
No, boss, I didn't hear a thing.
That's funny. And what if I'm just imagining it? Oh, well. Here's the plate, Rochester. I finished my dessert.
Just a minute, boss. Let me look at you again. Yeah, I'll go get the razor and shave you.
Shave me?
Yeah, you've got so much whipped cream on your face, it'd be a shame just to wipe it off.
Never mind. I'll use my napkin. Now, lay out a suit for me, will you, Rochester?
Okay. Oh, by the way, Mr. Benny, Dennis Day came over a little while ago, and he said he wanted to see you.
Oh, well, why didn't you tell me? Dennis! Dennis!
Here I am, Mr. Benny.
Oh. Hello, kid.
Hello. Say, Mr. Benny, I don't know why people rave so much about television. What programs? Fair. I've been sitting here watching it for 3 hours, and all they've shown is that ocean picture. All you can see is the waves splashing up against the screen.
Dennis, you're looking at the Bendix. The television's in the other room. Now, what did you want to see me about?
Well, my mother had to go to a club meeting, and she won't be back till late, so she told me to come over here so I won't get into mischief.
Mischief? Dennis, you're old enough to take care of yourself.
No, I'm not. Last week when my mother left me alone, it was terrible.
What?
I was sitting there getting bored. I wanted some excitement, so I stuck my head in the Mixmaster.
You stuck your head in the Mixmaster? That's the craziest thing I've ever heard of.
If you've never tried it, don't knock it.
Oh, my goodness. Look, kid, from what you told me, I'm not going to leave you alone in my house either. Now, you better come with Mary and me. We're going to see Sorry, Wrong Number.
With Barbara Stanwyck?
Dennis, I don't blame you, though. Gee, she's a wonderful actress. I don't know, she's so realistic. You know, so vibrant. So
Leone.
Dennis. Dennis, you heard that echo, didn't you?
No. Do you still keep hearing it, Mr. Benny?
Yes, and I don't know how to get rid of it. I don't know what to do.
Why don't you stick your head in the Mixmaster?
Oh, stop. Now, Dennis, while I'm changing my clothes, run over the song you're going to do on the program, will you?
Okay.
This is the moment.
And I've only got two passes. Now, let me see.
Shall I kill myself?
No! I'll figure out something.
Jack, you ought to be ashamed of yourself asking Barbara Stanwyck for passes.
Oh, I don't know, Mary. I gave her passes to my picture.
For your picture, they were dropping tickets from airplanes.
I didn't mind the tickets, but I got hit on the head with a dish. Oh, well. Well, I'll go over and buy Dennis's ticket. Now, wait here for me.
Gee, Dennis, you'll love Sorry Wrong Number. It's so tense and exciting.
It is?
Yeah. All through the picture, Barbara Stanwyck tries to use the telephone. And by accident, the wires get crossed and she hears two men plotting her own murder.
Gee.
Well, come on, let's go. I got your ticket, Dennis. And Dennis, as we go in, hold my hand and call me Daddy.
Tickets, please.
Here you are.
Jack, I want to sit in the loges.
Loges? These passes are for general admission. The loges will be an extra 60 cents.
Oh. Well.
Daddy, get your hand out of my pocket.
Oh, I'm sorry. How much did you say that was, mister?
Oh, I gave it to him already.
Oh. Well, let's go in. Imagine a big star like Barbara Stanwyck couldn't get me low seats. Come on, man.
Hot dogs, scorecards, pennants. Get your football pennants here. We have both teams, UCLA and Stanford pennants.
Wait a minute, Bud. This is a theater. What's the idea of selling football pennants?
For the newsreel. Pennants, get your pennants here. Hot dogs, scorecards, cushions, soft cushions. Oh, you brought your own, huh, Bud?
Yes.
Come on, Jack.
Immediate seating, third aisle to your right, please.
Come on, kids, this aisle to the right, right here. Here, I'll open the door, Mary. Gosh, the picture started already.
Yeah, here are three seats over here.
Get in, Dennis.
Get loge seats.
Quiet.
Operator. Number, please.
Oh, thank goodness. Operator, I've been trying to get Murray Hill 35097 for the last half hour, and the line is always busy. Will you ring it for me, please?
One moment, please.
It's my husband's office. He should have been home hours ago, and I don't know what's keeping him or why that ridiculous line should be busy.
Ringing Murray Hill 35097. That line is busy.
Busy, busy, busy. That's all I've been getting. It can be busy. They've got a switchboard there. Why doesn't somebody answer? Why? Why?
Gosh, isn't Barbara wonderful?
Yeah, she's beautiful, too.
You ought to see her husband in a yellow beret.
Ringing Murray Hill 35097.
Oh, thank heaven, it's ringing. It's ringing.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Stevenson, please.
Hello?
I want to talk to Mr. Henry Stevenson, please.
Hello? Hello, George. Speaking.
Who is this? What number have I got?
It's all set, George, just like we planned it, and we do it tonight.
That's good. I'm ready, and the coast is clear.
Oh, those men, what are they talking about? I must have the wrong line. Get off the line, please. Get off the line.
Hold that line.
Damn it. The newsreel isn't on yet.
Jack, be quiet.
Operator. Operator, you cut me in on somebody else's conversation. I want Murray Hill 35097.
Now, look, George, I don't want any slip-up on this.
Want me to use a gun?
No, that's too noisy. Strangler.
Operator! Operator!
Number, please.
Operator, listen to me. I just heard two men talking. They're plotting a murder. Operator, what's the matter with you?
Remember, George, go in the back way, climb the fire escape, and take your time. Don't make any noise. Go up slowly, slowly, slowly.
Slowly, only.
There it is again. That echo. Dennis, Mary, you heard it, didn't you?
Jack, it's embarrassing.
I It's up to you. See that she's dead by midnight.
Okay, pal. Leave it to me.
Audrey! Audrey, there's no time! Listen to me!
I'm trying to get Murray Hill 3509.
Oh, never mind that. Now get me the police. Look, operator, I'm an invalid, and I just had a terrible shock tonight on the telephone, and I'm very anxious to trace a call. It's about a murder, a terrible cold-blooded murder of a poor innocent woman tonight. Tonight! You've got to hurry. They're going to do it before 12 o'clock. Get me the police! Get me the police!
I thought it was very good.
And what a finish when she found out those two men on the telephone were actually plotting her murder.
Yeah, but that's the only part, Mary, that wasn't believable. Imagine the coincidence of just picking up the phone and hearing two men plotting your own murder. I don't know. It was too far-fetched.
It was not.
I agree with Daddy.
Dennis, you can stop calling me that now. Anyway, Mary, I must admit that I enjoyed watching the picture, but in real life, a thing like that couldn't happen.
Oh, it couldn't, eh? Well, look after you last year when you were worried about your option, and you tried to get your sponsor, Mr. Riggio, on the phone.
Look, Mary.
What was it, Mary? What happened?
I'll tell you what happened. It was last May, near the end of the season, and Jack was a nervous wreck.
Busy. It can't be busy all this time. Operator. Quiet, Polly. Operator.
I'm sorry, that line is busy.
Listen, operator, I've been trying to get that number for the last 20 minutes. It's my sponsor's office. They have a switchboard there.
I'm sorry, the line is busy.
It can't be busy. I've been ringing that number since 25 after 11. Do you know what time it is now?
For the correct time, dial Ulrich.
I know what time it is. Look, operator. I'm Jack Benny. I have a radio program. My option comes up at 12 o'clock today. If I don't hear from my sponsor, Mr. Riggio, in 15 minutes, I'll be out of a job. Now get me Hollywood. 7337.
7337.
Quiet. Polly, here's a cracker. And eat it slowly. It may be your last. Operator!
I'm ringing the number.
Good. I know it can't be busy. I'm sure there must be something wrong with you. It's ringing! It's ringing!
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello? Is that you, Mr. Riggio?
Mr. Riggio! That's my sponsor. Mr. Riggio, this is me, Jack Benny.
Hello, Frank.
They can't hear me. The wires must be crossed.
Well, Frank, I've given the matter a great deal of thought, and I've decided to let him go.
Oh, I see. Well, it's going to be quite a shock to him. He's been with us a long time.
I know, Frank, but he's had it coming. His work has fallen off so badly, it isn't funny anymore.
Yipe! They're talking about me. Mr. Riggio, operator!
Well, Mr. Riggio, don't you think you ought to warn him and then give him another chance?
Yeah.
Might be difficult to replace him.
That's right. Tell him, Frank, tell him. Nice boy, Frank. Nice boy, tell him.
No, Frank, I've made up my mind. I think we should look for a younger man.
Younger? Well, I'm only 39. You didn't think I was old 5 years ago when I was 38. You've got to listen to me.
So you don't think warning him would do any good, eh, Mr. Riggio?
No, he's had his chance.
Mr. Riggio, please. Frank had a swell idea. Warn me. Give me another chance. I might be difficult to replace. Mel Blanc has 5 shows. So he couldn't even try.
Well, all right, Mr. Riggio. It isn't going to be easy, but I'll tell him.
I've been cut off. Operator!
Number, please.
Operator, I want Hollywood 7337. Will you please get it for me?
You may dial that number direct.
But I've been dialing all morning. My finger is so swollen it won't fit in the hole.
One moment, please. I will try
you. Thank you. Only 5 minutes. Only 5 minutes to go. If I could only talk to Mr. Riggio. If I could plead with him, beg him, like I did last year. Maybe I could talk him into giving me another...
Sorry, that line is busy.
Busy, busy, busy! What am I going to do? I got to think fast. It's 4:56. Wait a minute, I know. I'll call my agent. That's it, my agent. Why am I paying him 9%? That might be Mr. Riggio. Oh, hello?
Hello, is that you, Edna?
Edna?
This is Johnny McGuire. I just got off my ship. Haven't seen a woman in 3 years. You're the first one I called.
You must have the wrong number.
Don't give me that, Edna. I recognize your voice right away.
But I...
Come on, Edna. Let's you and me step out tonight. I'll buy you a nice big dinner.
I'm telling you, you have the wrong... Dinner? No. What am I thinking of? No. Then he'd walk... I'm sorry, you have the wrong number. I wish I were, Eddie. At least then I'd know... Oh, my goodness. Only 12:03. No time to call my agent now. I gotta get Mr. Riggio. Maybe he hasn't signed anybody else yet. I'll tell him I'll do anything he asks me. Anything. I'll let him cut my salary. This year I'll suggest it myself. Why not? The line's clear. It's not busy. I still have time.
This is Hollywood, 7337.
Yeah, but get me Mr. Riggio, quick. This is Jack Benton.
Mr. Riggio is busy on another line. Will you call back?
No. I'll hold on. I've only got 3 minutes. Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Is that you, Mr. Riggio? Oh, it's you, Hollywood. Shut your big mouth.
Hello? What's that?
Mr. Riggio. Mr. Riggio, I wasn't talking to you. It was my parrot. This is Jack Benny. Hello again. Hello again.
Well, Jack, I'm glad you called. I want to talk
Mr. Riggio, please. Before you say anything, listen to me. You got to hear my side of it. I know I've been on the air a long time, but I'm not through yet. Honest, I'm not. There's still a few good years left in me, and I want you to have them.
But, Jack...
L-A-S-M-F-T. L-A-S-M-F-T.
But, Jack...
Try tobacco. La, 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 la. I've made mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. I mean, everybody but you, Mr. Riggio. And I've done everything you've asked me to. Last year, I kept my eye on the red bullseye till it was bloodshot. Mr. Riggio, you've got to listen to me.
Jack, what are you so upset about? We have no intention of letting you go.
But you don't understand, Mr. What? You mean you're going to pick up my option?
Why, certainly. I've been trying to call you all morning. Your phone's been busy.
My phone busy? Oh. Oh.
Tell me, Jack. Whatever gave you the idea we wouldn't take up your option?
Well, Mr. Riggio, I called you a few minutes ago and the wires got crossed. Yeah, I heard you talking to a man named Frank.
Frank? Oh, yes. He's my office manager.
Well, I overheard you telling him to let somebody go, that you didn't want him anymore.
Oh, yes. We had to discharge him. He was a bookkeeper. Very incompetent.
The bookkeeper? Oh. The bookkeeper? Well, Mr. Riggio, if the man wasn't doing his work, what else could you do? I mean, it's not your fault if he isn't capable. There's no place for sentiment in business. That's what I like about you, Mr. Riggio. You don't let your heart rule your head. That bookkeeper got what was coming to him. I don't believe in a man whining and trying to hang on to a job when he's not wanted. I agree with you. If a man fails to deliver, let him go. Get rid of him, I say. Fire!
Ladies and gentlemen, travel on our highways is increasing. It is now 11% above pre-war peak. So when traveling, obey the law. Don't take a chance and be careful. The life you save may be your own. Jack will be back in just a moment, but first...
Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned in for the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, which follows immediately. And on Saturday, be sure to listen to A Day in the Life of Dennis Day. I want to thank Miss Barbara Stanwyck for being with us on the program tonight and for the passes. And and Rita, I couldn't get you on the phone, so send three, please. Now, to my friends in San Francisco, I'll be seeing you at the Opera House on Friday, October 22nd, at the Friars Frolic for the Variety Club benefit.
Well, you're going to San Francisco, eh, Jack?
Uh-huh.
Oh, you going to go by plane?
By plane? Well, no.
Oh, then you're going on the train.
The train? No. No, no, no.
Oh, then you're going to drive your car.
No. No, you see, I made a deal with a fellow who's going that way.
Oh, you're going to share expenses.
You know, all I have to do is help him unload the oranges.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
There you have Jack Benny from October 17, 1948. Here on Radio Vault. For your 28th day of May, 2024. We're here until 1 o'clock, and we've got something kind of fun, kind of campy, kind of intriguing. Little-known series from 1952 called Planet Man. Scorned by old-time radio fans, but we're going to let you listen. That's up next on Radio Vault on 89.3 WHFI, the station that makes waves.
All right. I'm Andy Parks, the host of Strictly Gospel, where we have nothing but the very best in gospel jazz, gospel hip-hop, urban contemporary praise and worship, you name it, all things gospel but strictly gospel, every Tuesday afternoon between the hours of 1 and 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then again, part two, on Thursday afternoon between the hours of 4 and 6 p.m. I tell you, it's gonna be a time. Tune in on the station that's making waves, WHFR.FM.
You really ought to be on stage. You're such a drama queen. Don't be so dramatic. Have you ever heard comments like these directed to you? If so, then Henry Ford College's two-year degree in theater arts is for you. And by the time you finish, you can continue your degree at a four-year college. Explore your creative side, performing, directing, or in technical design. We offer more theater classes than any two-year college in Michigan, plus four productions a year. For more information, visit the Henry Ford College website, hfcc.edu.
A powerful threat calls for a greater response.
When there's a battle, bring strength.
When there's a problem, seek answers.
When there is doubt, give hope.
Not tomorrow.
Not in a few years. But right now.
Some battles must be faced together. Cancer fighters stand up to cancer every day. And you can be part of this battle too.
Visit standuptocancer.org to learn more.
Together, we can save lives.
The Planet Man!
fascinating story of Dantro, the Planet Man, troubleshooter for the League of Planets organization, the law enforcement body for peace and justice in the celestial world, whose headquarters and center of operations are situated on the capital of all the planets, Planaria Rex. From Mercury to Pluto, wherever danger threatens the universe, you will find Dantro, the Planet Man, fighting for fair play. In a moment, the Planet Man. When we left the crew of Earth's first rocket expedition, they were heading for a crash on the moon. We find Dr. Darrow, his daughter Pat, Slats, the engineer, and our two young stowaways, Billy and Jane, discussing their dangerous predicament. The sound of the complicated control mechanism makes the cabin seem like a chatterbox of confusion. And from the outside can be heard the mad whining of the lunar currents. We find them now as they're getting closer and closer to the moon's surface. Slats is speaking.
Our altimeter reading is dropping pretty fast, Professor.
Isn't there any way we can break our fall on the moon?
I've thought of everything, Pat, but there just doesn't seem to be any answer. The extra power we lost on takeoff was our only hope.
Father, I know you don't like to do things second best, but in a situation like this, it might be necessary.
What do you mean, Pat?
Well, what about using our remaining power to go into an orbit around the moon, as we discussed in our original plan?
Yes, but what good will that do? We still come to the same end, except that the agony will be prolonged.
Let's do it, Professor. We got nothing to lose.
Whatever it is, I'm game, Uncle John.
Me too, Uncle John.
You know what they say, Professor. Where there's life, there's hope.
It'll be a ticklish maneuver now since we've gotten into the pull of the moon and our power is limited. But if the rest of you are game, so am I. Stand by to maneuver. Pat, start the reactor.
Yes, Father.
Slats, check the radar rangefinder and make sure you pinpoint those readings on the moon.
Yes, sir.
I'll pilot. Now keep your fingers crossed. Heading 10 degrees starboard.
Heading 10 degrees starboard.
Cut the reactor, Pat.
Cutting reactor.
What's our reading?
It's 63.3. We need a bit more, Professor.
Hit it again, Pat.
Reactor on.
Are we picking it up fast enough, Slats? What's the reading?
Not enough, Professor. We need a fraction more.
Are you sure, Slats? I've got our heading way over, and our power can't last much longer with such a radical course heading. Slats, give me a reading. Slats, do you hear me? Give me a reading.
It's 89.4. Six more points, Professor.
That's the end of our power. I hope we make it.
Steady. Just a bit more, old Ironsides. There. Well, we made it. We made it, Professor.
Hey,
what are we all so happy about? We're right in the middle of nowhere.
You mean that we're not going to land on the moon after all?
I'm afraid not, Billy.
What's going to happen?
Nothing, Jane. We're just going to circle the moon the way the moon circles the Earth.
Just look at that view of the moon. What a break. So near and yet so far.
Uncle John, something is happening to the air. It's getting stuffy in here.
I know, Billy, it's the air circulator slowing down. Breathing will be just a bit difficult from now on since our oxygen supply is limited.
Professor, can you hear me?
Slats, where are you? What are you up to?
I'm outside the ship bringing up the lunar communications generator. Thought we might as well set it up and try to make contact with the Earth.
You can't do that alone.
I'm here too.
Careful, Pat. Don't let go now. Pat! Slats, grab her. She's floating away.
What?
Quick, Slats.
Slats, help me. Help me.
Pat, here. Grab my hand. Quick now. Come on. Tight now. Easy. There we are. Steady now.
He pulled her back, Uncle John.
Pat, Slats, is everything all right?
Yes, Father, thanks to Slats. I thought I was a goner.
Don't forget you're out in space, Pat, and if you ever drifted away, we'd never be able to get you back.
It's all okay now, Professor. We're coming in.
Pat?
Yes, Billy?
Jane and I know what's going on.
What are you talking about?
Pat, we know this whole trip was spoiled because we stowed aboard. It's all our fault.
Now listen to me, you two, and stop feeling guilty. It wasn't the best idea for you to sneak aboard, but it did happen. And besides, we could have been wrong in our calculations. The important thing now is for all of us to face up to whatever lies ahead. And I know that you two won't let me down.
Never, Pat.
Not us, Pat. All right, now let's just forget the whole thing. I wonder where Slats and Father are.
We'll return to Planet Man in just a moment.
So, level off!
Well, it looks like the first trip from Earth to the Moon is coming to its tragic end. The good ship Constitution is in a hopeless orbit about the Moon. The entire crew is slowly suffocating because the oxygen supply is coming to an end. Professor Darrow and Slats are in the posterior cargo chamber. Slats is apparently up to something.
Why don't you go to the control cabin, Professor, and lie down for a while? It'll be easier for you to breathe.
I think I'd better stay here. I hate to have Pat and the kids see me so worried and worn out. Slats, you've got something on your mind. What is it?
I've been thinking, Professor. I really haven't got anybody. Nobody'd miss me, and you and Pat and the kids have a little extra time.
Now, what are you driving at?
Well, a big guy like me uses a lot of oxygen. All I have to do is to step through that port, and it'll be all over in a second. You people have a little longer.
Don't be a fool, Slats. We're all in this together. Besides, if anybody goes through the port, it will be me. I'm the oldest, and besides, the whole thing is my responsibility.
Now, look, Professor, I've made up my mind. There's no point in trying to stop me.
No, Slats, don't jump.
No, don't stop me, Professor. I'll hit you. I didn't mean to hurt you, Professor, but this is the way it's got to be. So long, Professor. What's that?
What's going on in there? What's that clanging?
We're not clanging anything. I thought it was you. Professor, get up. Something's happened.
What?
There's something next to our ship.
Huh? Oh, my head. The ship. Here, help me. Let me see the... What? It's impossible. But it looks like another ship is next to ours.
Let me help you, Professor. We must get to the control cabin with the others.
Father, Slats, what is it?
I don't know, but now we'd better stay close together. Slats, where are you going?
Just to get this fishing wrench. I don't know what's coming through that hatch, but I'm not taking any chance.
Well, be careful and don't get too close to the hatch.
Let's all be very quiet.
Oh, Uncle John, look!
Stand back, whatever you are.
Look, it's Slats. He can't move. He's frozen in his tracks.
Oh, Slats.
Why, it's a man.
What did you expect? A three-headed Mercurian man-eater? I am a man from the planets.
A planet man? Boy, wait till the gang hears about this.
Billy, please.
My name is Dantro, the planet man, and I come in peace. I represent the League of Planets, and my mission is to bring all of you to Planaria Rex.
Planaria Rex? League of Planets?
Where is that?
I'll explain in a moment. But I don't think we should leave your brave friend Slats in this paralyzed predicament. He'll snap right out of it with a shot of this ray gun neutralizer.
What happened? Did I get him?
Slats. It's all right, Slats. We're all safe. It seems that we've met a friend, and his name is Dantro, the planet man.
It's nice to meet a brave man like you, Slats. Here, let me help you up.
Dantro, my name is John Darrow. This is my daughter and assistant, Pat.
How do you do?
And I think you've already met Slats.
Yeah.
And these two are Jane and Billy, my niece and nephew.
Well,
it's
hi.
A pleasure to know you all. You see, we've really known you for a long time, since we've been able to watch your experiments. In fact, we've been in touch with this entire trip of yours. We've even learned to speak your language.
But how could you do all that?
We planet men have many devices which Earth has not yet discovered. And one of them is the cosmic communicator, which enables us to see and hear across the millions of miles of space.
But why have you kept the existence of the League of Planets from the Earth?
Where is Planaria Rex, and why haven't I been able to chart its position?
Everything will be explained to you in due time.
What's that noise?
It's coming from my ship. We must hurry along. It's the bogey warning oscillator telling us there are some unidentified ships approaching.
But we can't leave the Constitution.
Not old Ironside.
Your ship will be safe in this orbit for 1,000 years. We must not waste time.
Will I get a spacesuit like yours?
Will you let me fly the ship?
I see Earth children are no different from ours. There's our last warning. Quick, through the hatch into my ship, the Planeteer.
What adventures lie ahead for the Earth people? What will they find on Planaria Rex? Whose ships are those approaching the helpless Constitution? We'll be back in just a moment. But first, here is a message that Dan Tro, the Planet Man, wants you to hear. Tune in again for more transcribed thrills and adventures. Find out what happens to the Earth people as they speed toward a new world on Planaria Rex. Rocket millions of light years into space with Dan Tro, the Planet Man. Planet Man! Fascinating story of Dan Tro, the Planet Man, troubleshooter for the League of Planets organization, the law enforcement body for peace and justice in the celestial world, whose headquarters and center of operations are situated on the capital of all the planets, Planaria Rex. From Mercury to Pluto, wherever danger threatens the universe, you will find Dan Tro, the Planet Man, fighting for fair play. In a moment, the Planet Man. At this moment, Dan Tro, the Planet Man, and the crew of the Earth's first space expedition, whom Dan Tro saved from certain death, are swiftly speeding toward Planaria Rex. They have just gotten out of the reach of some unidentified bogey spaceships. Dan Tro's ship, the Planeteer, is the most breathtaking engineering feat the Earth people have ever seen. It's as large as a fortress, and an endless system of instruments and mechanisms in the control chamber give it the appearance of a fantastic flying laboratory. Dan Tro is speaking.
With the use of this cosmic communicator, we've been able to watch the Earth for many years. This is how we knew all about your experiments, Professor Darrow, in the moment you took off for the moon. Here, I'll tune it in on your launching site, and you can see and hear what they're saying about your expedition.
Look, Professor, it's Charlie and Dr. Sterling.
I can't believe they didn't make it. Professor Darrow seems so sure. The scaffolding fire just before launching must have caused some trouble we never figured on. It's bad enough losing the three of them, but it looks like those two kids must have gone along with them. They were here 1 minute and gone the next. One of the workmen saw them near the rocket platform before the fire broke out.
I'm afraid I'll have to cut off the communicator now. You see, I must keep it clear for incoming messages. What is this? Emergency garble signal. Let me hit that key. I've got to decode this message.
Read me.
This is Dan Tro. I am reading.
Dan Tro, this is Judge Augustus. Have you contacted the Earth people?
Yes, sir. They're aboard the Planeteer.
Good. Friends from Earth, forgive this hurried greeting. I'll welcome you personally when you arrive. Dan Tro, get back as quickly as possible. There's trouble brewing.
What's wrong?
Marston is up to some evil. Get back at once.
Yes, sir. Signing off. Brace yourselves. I'm giving her the works. Attention, all hands. Jets alive. Jets alive.
Dan Tro, how
fast are we going?
About 5,000 miles per second.
Incredible. Say, who is this fella Marston? He sure gets lots of fast action.
Well, I guess I'd better explain a few things. You see, the League of Planets is made up of all the inhabited parts of the solar system. Mercury, Venus, Mars, and some of the moons of Saturn and Jupiter.
Damn, Joe, there's a red light blinking on the spark panel. What does it mean?
Oh, thanks, Billy. I must switch on my auxiliary cooling coils. Without that, the skin of the ship would melt at this speed. A few more turns on this ship and you'll be able to pilot her, Billy.
Oh, boy, I'd sure like that.
Well, anyhow, the member planets of the League have been living in peace for many centuries until recently, when a new leader has taken over on Mars. His name is Marston, and he's been plotting the conquest of the solar system. So far, the League has kept him in check. However, I'm afraid that once his plans are known, war between the worlds will be inevitable.
Why don't you punch him in the nose?
Now, Billy.
You're talking just like an old-fashioned cowboy, Billy. What you mean is, why don't you paralyze him a little?
Jane, please.
It's all right, Pat. You see, we of the League of Planets are not permitted to resort to violence except in self-defense. Let's not worry about Marston now. That's not your problem. Well, we'll soon be at Planaria Rex.
We'll return to the exciting story of the Planet Man in just a moment.
So, level off!
Dantro, the Planet Man, under urgent orders from Judge Augustus, is flying the Earth people to Planaria Rex at record speed. On the planet of the unknown, the mysterious planet Mars, certain plans are taking shape which can only mean that Marston, the dictator of Mars, is up to some foul play. As we look into the cold, foreboding secret meeting place of the Martian Council, we find Marston, a giant, fierce, ruthless ruler, holding court with his council. Behind Marston, you can hear a small, ugly, and weird creature, his Martian flying cobra, FEMA. It's Marston's only means of protection, since this creature has the powers to warn Marston of any impending danger. Marston trusts no one, hence FEMA is constantly with him.
Listen. Can I count on no one? Must I conquer the whole solar system alone? I must have speed. They must strike before the other planets suspect our plan. Before they know it, Marston will rule the solar system.
When do we invade the Earth?
As soon as our ships return with the crew of Earth's first rocket ship. They should have reached there by now. Once they are our prisoners, we can move. From their eminent Professor Darrow, we will learn much to help us conquer the Earth.
Then with the Earth's resources and her people as our slaves, we can defy the League of Planets.
Marston! Marston! We have just received word from our ships. They have found the Earth ship.
Good, good.
But the crew is gone. Dantro must have reached them first, and it's believed they are on their way to Planaria Rex.
What? Must everyone fail me? Have the ships return immediately. When they arrive, execute the commanders of both ships. FEMA, you are the only one who understands and protects me. And as for the rest of you, my trusted counsel, you will learn that when Marston wants something done, it will be done.
How can we keep them from reaching Planaria Rex?
Tara, my most eminent and brilliant scientist, what would you suggest? And I warn you, think well on this answer.
Marston, we must not betray ourselves in open violence. Our astronomers have discovered a flight of asteroids in the vicinity of Planaria Rex. By using our new gravitational repellers, we can direct these asteroids into the path of Dantro's ship.
Yes. Won't they be able to avoid them? You know only too well that Dantro's ship is equipped with deflectors.
It will be impossible for any deflectors to deal with so many asteroids at the speed at which they are traveling. They cannot change the course of their flight, and they are certain to crash.
Proceed with your plan, and do not fail. Remember that at this moment, We are trying to confuse the League of Planets Council into voting for our plan to, shall we say, peacefully contact the Earth. Our representative is ridiculing Judge Augustus' story of an Earth rocket ship because we were supposed to have destroyed the ship and captured its crew. We must not look like fools. And speaking of fools, you can all leave now. Dantro, you have beaten me again. I thought I might one day have the pleasure of running this radium dagger through you. But the asteroids will have to do the job for me.
As the representative of Mars, I say to this council, why do we wait any longer? I repeat to this council that there is no rocket ship from Earth in an orbit about the moon. There are no Earth people. I insist that we vote on the Mars resolution to permit the planet Mars to make peaceful contact with the Earth. We have agreed on the vote.
Members of the council, I request you wait. I personally contacted Dantro. And I know he is on his way to Planaria Rex with the Earth people.
We've had too many words about Dantro. Why isn't he here with proof? If we delay this vote any longer, we will be defaulting on our agreement to vote. And this council will be causing great grievance to my planet Mars. I demand a vote now.
I implore the council to wait.
Dantro, please hurry.
Boy, what a way to travel. No need for gravity shoes. I can't wait until we get this drive in the Constitution. It's just wonderful for my corn.
I'm sure that League of Planets has other things to do besides worry about your corn.
Hey, what's up?
What a weird noise.
Touch my ears.
What's this? I can't understand it. We seem to be running into a field of asteroids that shouldn't be in this area.
Won't your deflectors take care of that?
The deflectors will take care of any ordinary obstructions, but there are hundreds of asteroids ahead. My latest report from Central Control shows them to be 3 million miles away. It's impossible, but there they are.
Is there any danger?
Can we go around them?
We're traveling so fast, it's impossible to change course that much. I'm slowing down, but I'm afraid we're going to hit them right smack in the center. All hands, secure ship. Stand by for a possible collision.
Well, Dantro, the planet man, and the Earth people seem to be in quite a spot. We'll be back in a moment. But first, here is a message that the planet man wants you to hear. Tune in again for more transcribed thrills and adventures. Find out what happens to the Earth people as they speed toward a new world on Planaria Rex. Rocket millions of light years into space with Dantro, the planet man.
All right, how about that? Good old time 1950s science fiction, kids science fiction from 1952. Planet Man, will do some more of those in the shows to come. That's going to wrap it for Radio Vault for today. We're going to make way for Strictly Gospel, and hopefully we'll talk to you Sunday night for Sunday Night Mysteries here on WHFR. In the meantime, you stay by your radio and hang in there for Andy Parks and Strictly Gospel. That's next on 89.3 WHFR. Have yourself a good day.
If you're like me, 60 and retired, making ends meet, especially here at the supermarket and drugstore, is tough. I'm so blessed to have found BenefitsCheckup.org. It's a free and confidential website from the National Council on Aging that connected me to $1,200 a year in programs that help pay for food, medicine, utilities, and more. Maybe it can help you. BenefitsCheckup.org.
Are you a Dearborn resident 60 years or older? Did you know that you can take classes at Henry Ford College tuition free? Would you like to improve your computer skills, become an actor, an artist, or an auto mechanic, or enjoy one of 100 other classes? You could even find yourself on the radio like I did, and I did it tuition free at Henry Ford College. For a complete information and a list of classes, please visit our website at hfcc.edu.
Tune in Thursdays from 8 to 11 p.m. to hear The Jump Button. I'm your host, Rob with Two B's. On The Jump Button, you will hear music from and about video games, soundtracks, animation, and more. It's your weekly pop culture playlist and all the super dorky radio you can handle every Thursday from 8 to 11 p.m. Heard only here on WHFR.FM.
Listener supported. Non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
I'm Andy Parks, and this is Strictly Gospel. ¶¶